Hey, this is Chase Sexton. You're listening to the Moto X Pod Show.
What's up, you guys? Jeremy McGrath here. You are listening to Moto X Pod Show.
Welcome back. It's show 299 of the Vital MX Moto X Pod Show, presented by Racetech and Yamaha. Show 300 is next week. We're back in Texas with Scott and TJ in studio. Grant Harlan may be coming in, and we've got guests locked in, including Ken Roxon and Eli Tomac, working on another one. But this week, we have Monster Energy Yamaha Star Racing's Justin Cooper and two-time Dakar winner Monster Energy Honda's Ricky Brabeck are both going to be on the phone. We got another special guest in studio while we're here in California. We have AEO Powersport KTM's Derek Kelly in studio. What's up, DK?
Thanks for having me. Stoked to be on.
It's about time, man. We've had you on the show for years and finally got you in studio. It's unfortunately, you're not racing right now. We're going to get into that. But how's it feel to be in studio? You nervous at all?
Oh, a little nervous. A little starstruck here.
Yeah, Michael Lindsay will do that before. To you.
Yeah, it's hard not to get starstruck by that guy.
This guy's so fucking full of shit right now.
Well, as mentioned, also in studio, running the cameras again this week, Vital MX's Michael Lindsay. What's up, ML?
I have to pan back to myself. Yay. Great times. We're killing it. We're only a couple minutes late this week, and we have a working show this week. So far, nothing has failed.
But we're a few minutes late because of a ton of new graphics that our guy Sean hooked up. We're literally working on that 2 minutes ago. Pretty badass. We're upgrading the show every week. What are you laughing at?
I did realize one we forgot.
What did we forget?
I don't have a name tag for Derek.
Oh, we did not get, well, Derek Kelly in studio. If you're listening, if you're watching.
Derek Kelly. AEO Power Sports KTM. Should be a little pop-up.
At least it doesn't say like.
That's right about where it should be, so that's perfect.
At least it doesn't say what I wrote in my notes. First of all, Dylan Kelly. Because his brother Dylan, work with Dylan so much. I wrote Dylan down, and I was like, wait, that's not Dylan, it's Derek.
That works. We look enough alike.
Yeah, right?
He's using my fucking drink to hold up his...
Take the drink.
Thank you. He's holding up his phone with my drink.
Again, we're back presenting sponsors. We're very thankful to have Racetech and Yamaha Motor USA on board. Racetech, this is going to be the Racetech Open Discussion. I want to remind you guys that not only does Racetech do suspension, they do motor work, and they've been developing the best combination of porting, cam timing, mapping, and related components to build world-class engines is a painstaking process. Racetech has spent an impressive number of hours doing R&D on the flow bench, dyno, CNC, and at the track to create the Racetech Power Plan. If you follow the RT Power Plan and assemble the engine correctly, you can build an engine capable of competing with anything in the world. Go to racetech.com, check out all those different things, different options, find your local service center, talk to your local Racetech service rep, and he can hook you up. Appreciate Racetech being on for this opening discussion. Lots to talk about. We'll start off with... Whoa, we got there. We got a little audio in the back.
I turned down my own audio. We're
just You're just checking the audio. I want to talk about, first of all, what just... was one of my highs that we're going to get to when we get to the Prox highs and lows. And that's Aaron Plessinger finally getting a win. Derek, after Detroit last year, I was a little nervous. Like, is it going to happen? Because he's one of those guys that's not, in my mind, guaranteed a win. And he finally got it done. One of the nicest dudes on the planet. What do you think about that?
No, that's awesome. I'm stoked for him. Obviously, like, you always pull for those guys that are cool. And it's stoked to see a win, obviously, after the heartbreak last year. I'm just stoked for him. I mean, he obviously had to come from behind. He didn't have the lead. He was battling with Roxon for a little bit, and then Roxon ended up going down, and he just rode to the finish.
Yeah, I mean, and feel free to move that mic over a little bit if you want.
Whatever
if you grab it down, that you can just kind of pull it towards you and get a little more comfortable.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, and ML, were you at all, like, again, AP's a guy that I don't feel is guaranteed to win. He's capable of winning. But was there at all when you lost that race in Detroit last year on the last lap, kind of like, oh, that could have been the shot?
Oh, 100%. That was me and Lewis discussed that that night. We kind of said, like, what if this is his shot? Like, I'd be bummed for it to go down like that. But, I mean, there's other great riders in this class that haven't won a 450 Supercross rate. Take Malcolm Stewart, take Adam Ciancerello. And we talked about it. It's like, hey, those guys, you know, You would hope they'd get that another chance, but it may not happen. So in AP's case, 100%, I was really bummed. Like, what if that's that dude's one chance to do it? So I think, you know, everybody's stoked for AP. I mean, you saw how many riders went up to him and congratulated him afterwards, but I think even bigger, other than everybody liking AP, I think a lot of people felt the same way. Like, yes, he was able to get that redemption, because it, as much as I wish I could say it was guaranteed, it wasn't. It never is in this sport.
No, it's not guaranteed for anybody, but like AP, I it's always hard to say that, like, oh, that was his one shot, like Detroit yeah. last year, but he has hot streaks, dude. Like, mm-hmm. you look back when he was on Star Yamaha, like outdoors in, what yeah. was that, like 21?
Oh, he's killing Adilla a couple of rounds. Fire
until yeah, like, Larry looped out all
Adilla. But yeah, yeah.
He has those hot streaks, and I mean, he always.
No, I'm talking, Jamie, your hat's on crooked as hell right now.
Really? It's just the headphones.
Yeah. Just saying you look like an old man with a crooked ass hat.
Well, I am an old man with a crooked ass hat.
Well, there
is it any better now?
Yeah,
it's call it what it is.
Yeah, you guys, yeah. just deal with me, man. Shut up.
Just trying to help you. Just trying to help.
I just see ML over there going like this. I'm like, I don't even have a hat on. No,
look at the guy has a hat on. But no, to your point, like, I don't mean in a bad way of like, oh, what if it was more that what if. Like, I was hoping it was going to happen before the end of his career. He had plenty of time to make it happen, but it's like, it just would have sucked if that was.
No, it's awesome to see him finally get that, obviously, monkey off the back, and maybe he can roll it into this weekend.
And that's the thing. You don't see, like, a ton of one-time winners in the premier class, I feel like. It's like, once you get it done, you can usually get some more. So
yeah, it's the same thing with
that's
anything.
That's kind of what I want to lead into. So he went 4-5-1 so far. Now he has a win. They say they come easier. Do we see another win out of AP? Do we see another podium? We're going to talk about our podium picks towards the end of the show, but, you know, is it likely that now he's a podium guy regularly?
This year, I think, as we've seen over the opening rounds, I think some of these guys are so good. I think we finally have some of that parity. We always say, like, oh, 8 guys can win this year. The average for a long time has been 5. I'm convinced now that we'll have 6. I'm kind of guessing we'll have 6 this season.
Okay.
That's kind of where my personal guesstimate is. It could be a little bit higher even. I still think the next couple rounds are going to have a lot up and down. We've had 3 different winners in 3 rounds. I kind of think we get a 4th winner this weekend. So, I don't know. It wouldn't shock me if AP, like Derek said, he goes on streaks, so maybe he's a podium guy the next couple weeks. But also at the same time, it wouldn't shock me if he's off the podium this week, and I wouldn't hit the panic button because of it. I just think there's going to be the next couple rounds. There's still a lot that has to settle in this class, like, so I think there's going to be a lot of movement.
It's so stacked. I mean, if you don't get a good start, like, something little can happen, and you could be 8th, and it wouldn't even be a bad ride.
I think the cool part is, legitimately, we've said so many times, like, it's stacked, and then you still, by round 3, there's that 2 or 3, there's more separation, or even at the opening round, you can just see some guys have more speed. I don't know who that is yet. Like, it's... I haven't had that realization. I still feel like I look at 6 or 8 guys, either 6 guys I think for sure that can win and another 2 that I think can potentially win.
Yeah. And the weather's added to some of that disparity also. Oh, yeah. So it's, but I think this weekend at A2, maybe we'll get a little clearer picture of who the guys are, but I really feel like, kind of like you're saying, like, this year it's going to be all over the place.
Well, I think so. And it could play both ways. It's a triple crown, so it's 3 gate drops. So maybe that does give us some clarity, because maybe somebody steps up this weekend and kills it on 3 mains, or we continue to have this weird parity where we have 3 mains, maybe we get really wildly different winners, and even all the guys coming off the track are still the riders themselves are confused. One of them could kill it in main 1 and get a 5th in main 2 and just be like, okay, I thought I was the guy tonight. Apparently,
yeah, 3-way tie going to the 3rd main.
Yeah, it could happen. Then all those guys are asking themselves the same question when they go home, like, okay, who's the dude? Who's the guy? Nobody's really stepped up. Well, and, like, I think after A1, a lot of people would have thought that was Jet, but then his last 2 weeks have been super messy, and then all the other controversy around it. Like, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be the next topic I get into, is Jason Anderson, Jet Lawrence. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the new graphics. We were supposed to have El Hombre's post, but we just kind of ran out of time, but I do have it in front of me. So we saw what happened post-race. They got in each other's faces. There were some helmet grabbing, some helmet slapping. There was an apology issued, we'll say, from the Lawrence camp.
Yeah, we'll keep
not from Jet Lawrence.
Yeah.
And El Hombre made his own response, which I do believe was directly from Jason, and it was
very much directly from Jason.
So I'll just read it real quick since we can't drop it down. Okay, so first things first, my man Jet comes at me after he passes me and beats me, barks in my face. I bark back. After the race, you have his dad, Honda guy, come up and apologize. You have his agent calling saying sorry, saying he will put a post on Jet's page saying sorry. Employee texts me, sorry, I didn't take it personal, like a shit happens, like we were cool and it didn't happen. Not a word from Jet himself. Instead, unfollow and silence from the dude. Everyone is apologizing. Yeah, so basically, Jason's saying Jet didn't apologize.
And there's more.
But that's what I have in front of me.
Oh, the King comment.
Yeah. That's right. There was. Yeah, there was more. You're right. But he's basically saying Jet didn't do any of this. It was all from his camp, and he's not happy, and he's not done with it. I don't think Jason's not.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we've said it over and over. Who's the last person I would want to pick a fight with in the 450 class? Like,
yeah,
I saw a few people say Barsha, but I feel like Barsha would give it back to you the next week, and then it's kind of over. Jason, it could be round 12. Whoever, it could be Chase or Eli out front. It could be Jet in 10th trying to come through the pack, and all of a sudden the camera's going to pan over them. Jet Lawrence is on the ground. It could be Jason with him. I just, you never know with Jason because, even the way comments end, it doesn't feel like it's over. I don't know. This is what we said, coming to the big boy class, these guys all have egos in a sense. They all have success. They don't get pushed around. They don't deal with what they feel like is disrespect as easy as the 250 class. I even said this once, with the joke about Kenny on the podium thing when Chicago, the whole GIF thing.
Mm.
It's like, okay, you're in the 250 class. You can kind of joke around and make comments like that. It's a bunch of younger guys. When you get to the 450 class, you know, some of them aren't that much older. I don't know. There's a certain amount of respect, the way the guys carry themselves, where it's like, okay, it's no longer a boys' class. It's a man's class, and they all take it much differently.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously I'm not in the 450 class yet, but I mean, looking at
it'll be this summer.
Yeah, I will be. Maybe even some Supercross if I can get back healthy. But you don't really want to pick a fight with anybody. I mean, especially in the 450 class, you go down that list. How many championships were that 450 or 250 are there? And those guys, they may not be the same speed as Jet, like over the whole course of the race, but they're definitely fast enough to cause you some problems and derail your whole season or your race, obviously. And yeah, you talk about you don't want to pick a fight with Jason Anderson by any means, and Barsha on that aspect, like those guys aren't afraid to give it to you.
Well, and I think, and I thought about it from Jet's standpoint, it's like, okay, I get it. You got a rough start in the event. I think I would guess that he was probably frustrated before he got to Jason. It was a lot of issues with lappers because it's hard for guys to move. Even non-lappers, guys he's passing, it probably came easier in the 250 class. Coming from 15th to 3rd wasn't as hard. You get frustrated. You're like, I've won, in the back of your mind, I've won 6 championships in a row. He feels like he should be up into the podium trying to make up points, et cetera, et cetera. So
you also got to think he's, what, 19?
20? 20
gone. Is he 29? Yep,
I think he's 20 now.
But, dude, he's a young kid. He's obviously, he's got an ego of his own. He's kicked some serious ass. And, I mean, you do stuff you regret. And, I mean, I'm sure he'll come around and he'll learn.
That's just
it's what I want to ask. Is his, I don't know if ego is the right word. I don't feel like he's humble enough right now. I feel like there is a little bit of ego, a little bit of expectations of like, I'm the next guy or I'm the guy. And maybe he hasn't learned the respect that he should have for these guys yet.
And I think as with everything, I mean, a racer, you have to believe you can do it. And I think everybody has to find their path and their way. It's very hard to balance everything. One thing is like between the fan zone stuff, the media stuff they do with him, they try to paint him as this really like good-hearted kid in this stuff, but at the same time he's a competitor. At some point you got to kind of own that. They're in a tough spot where it's like, oh, do I playfully apologize? Do I stand up and say, no, I was pissed because I was racing? And like, yeah, maybe I got a little hard-headed, a little harsh, or a little hot-headed, but I'm here to win. And I feel like that's the tough road. They got to figure out what they want to balance, how they want to like perceive, how they want Jet to be perceived, like him, his camp, how they want to be perceived by people and how they portray themselves to other riders. And also Jet himself, how does he want, not only how does he portray, how does he want to stand with himself at the races? How does he want to carry himself? And again, he's young. This is something he's got to figure out. Does he want to try to play nice with everybody? Does he want to go down that road, or does he want to go after McGrath 72 and F everybody else? I'm here to win and get it done. I was talking to somebody in the industry today, and he brought that up. Like, look, you can play the card of try to backpedal from this, or you could go the opposite route and go all in.
You got to own it.
That's why I respect Jason a lot. Like, people question some of the stuff he does and things, and I do question some of his moves, like, on the track, like, getting caught up and stuff, but the one thing I'll give him is he's just straight up the way he carries himself, and you can't knock a dude for doing that. Like, he doesn't backpedal very often, doesn't try to hide what his ambition is, etc.
Yeah, and I don't know that Jet. I'm not saying that Jet has an ego and doesn't respect these other guys. I don't know where his mindset is. Right, we don't really know what's going on in his head and how he feels about all this. I just think people are starting to get a little bit of bad taste of the Lawrence hype, maybe, and that always happens when somebody's winning a lot. You start getting the haters, and you kind of. I just wonder what is in Jet's head. What is he thinking? Does he think, oh, you know, I deserve to be at the top and I should be the guy? Or, you know, who knows? He's 19, like you said, 20 years old. He's a kid and he hasn't really developed all those, mature mentality just yet.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say what his thoughts are on mm-hmm. it. And
like, he may feel awful.
He has a lot of hate, obviously, that's portrayed from like, people are tired of seeing him. Like, they're tired of hearing about him. They're tired of seeing about him, everything. But then you got to think, like, the kid's already broken records in his first year and done stuff that people haven't done. I mean, it's only been done two other times or three other times by two other people. And, I mean, it's just tough, and you can't really see what's inside his head.
Yeah, do you, ML, what would do you think it would take to calm this down? Like, the fans are kind of, you hear they're starting to get tired of Feld always talking about the Lawrence brothers. What do you think it's going to take to smooth this out where, like, I almost feel like we're not giving him enough, not respect, but we're just starting to get a bad taste in our mouth because things aren't even in his hands necessarily. He can't help that Feld is constantly Lawrence, 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 Jet, Jet, Jet. You know, it's not his fault. So, like, what do we do to, what can the Lawrence camp do to smooth this whole thing over?
Well, I think there's two ways of looking at it. As we talked about this earlier, PR 101 would probably say ignore, 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 just let it flush over. And eventually, you know, it'll die down. People still buy the donuts. People still buy the fan zone. People like him. People dislike him. Nothing changes. Whatever effect happened from Saturday night, it happens. That's it. Everybody moves on. They quit talking about it, but people's minds will have been made up based on what they saw. Or the opposite end of the spectrum, which I think is the least likely option, is you're aggressive in return is you go back and you go full open. And then it's you got to pick again.
Yeah.
You kind of can't meddle in the middle with the apology. You either have to go back and like be like, nope, I'm like, let's talk to people. Yeah, I'm hot-headed. I messed up, blah, blah, blah. Or no, I stand behind what I did. Like, I got hot-headed, but I'm here to win. Like I said, one is stay quiet. The other is be fully transparent and open, and you got to pick what you want to be. You can't, like I said, I always say the worst decision is not making a decision.
Yeah. Well, and I think the bottom line, he's got to get back up on top of that podium.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only thing that's going to smooth. If he continues to have this hard time he's going through, like obviously he struggled at San Fran and he struggled a bit last weekend, but if he gets up on top of that podium, it doesn't really matter what happened last weekend and what the haters say. Like, if you're winning, like, you're winning.
Yeah, but that's, I say, if you want to take it in, and that's why I say, then you stand up and say, like, this is all that matters. You don't continue to, you don't play silent and then try to win and then try to come back and be a meat, like, donut meat and art. Like I said, you pick what, how you want to be portrayed.
Well, obviously, it's a bad look for him, what happened this week. I think that they need to, you can't really brush it under the rug, but I wouldn't want to talk about it much if I was his camp.
Well, I've got a question for both of you, but first, I want to thank our other presenting sponsor, Yamaha Motor USA, which has a reputation for dominance. It doesn't happen overnight. It's built over decades. The YZ story is 50 years of iconic machines and groundbreaking innovations. Yamaha's new 50th anniversary edition YZs pay tribute to a half century of championship winning performance wrapped in stunning retro style. Check them out at YamahaMotorsports.com. Got my nice Yamaha Blue Crew shirt on. We got the Yamaha YZ koozie.
Bought and owned.
Some may say bought and owned, and some may be correct.
Jesus. Well, he's thank not you. A real guy.
Thank anymore. You, Yamaha.
Not saying him name. You paid for. Oh, God.
I do like my Yamaha, but no. Okay, so the question is...
Wait, we'll go to, real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I say the one thing I really hope that doesn't come from this? Of course, because NBC thing. I really hope the one thing they don't do is sit down and do an exclusive interview for the TV broadcast that's going to take up 15 minutes talking about it. That would...
They could cut to it in the middle of a battle if they wanted to.
Yes. That would
probably be the best.
Yes, that's what I fear more than anything at this point. I think that would just irritate every...
split screen.
I don't think it would do anybody any good.
Right. All right, so the question I want to ask you before we get Justin Cooper online here in a minute is, you gave ML basically two options. Apologize and fully retract and be better, or be the bad guy and say, to hell with it, this is who I am. What would you rather see?
I'd rather see Bad Guy. The hell with it. I don't know how to say it. I think he's a young, brash kid. I think he wants to win. I think he, like anybody should, that from what he's done the last couple of years, he wants to win more than freaking anything at this point. I don't know if I would try to back.
You want
to
see him be like Tyler Evans? And or, you know?
No, I'm not saying be the bad guy, but just be straight up like, yeah, I'm young. I made a mistake,
okay,
but I'm here to win. And like, I would basically kind of play it in the card of, it may happen again. I'm young. I'm brash. Yeah. I'm here to win. I'm not going to be apologetic about it. I have ambition. I think I'm good enough. And yeah, I got pissed I was held up by him. But in my head, I thought I should have been up on the podium. I was riding hard and I want, you know, I'm frustrated how the first two rounds have gone. This isn't how I want to start my season. I'm going to turn it around. I'm going to win tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Just go all in.
It's got to be the best.
What do you want to see, Derek? You want to see, I thought you meant like he was just going to go, yeah, I don't really care what you think.
No,
like,
I'm not saying be a dick and be okay, the bad guy, but again, just like put on heart, as I say, heart and sleeve. Like I'm basically saying answer how like maybe like Jason or Barsha would just
right.
Like, I'm here to do
I
it.
I think that, I mean,
I'm in, here to do
the
damn
past
thing.
Years, like Barsha, if you go back 3-4 years ago, he had a lot of hate, I think, and like some of the stuff that he did, but he just constantly was himself, and I think it turned a lot of fans back the other way. So I think the worst thing that Jet can do is go out and bow down basically and apologize. Yeah. But if he goes out and just says, you know what, it was a mistake, it might happen again, and stand on that top of that podium.
I was going to say, the opposite is look how much Vince Freeze hate gets, because Vince always plays kind of, oh, I didn't mean to, don't know why. I wasn't really racing, just playing stupid. No, own it. People respect it. They may be frustrated with you at first, but to your point, Derek, when, like Barsha, if you just be yourself and be upfront, people are going to like you for who you are. Like, and to your point, if he does it and backs it up and gets on the and starts winning, then he proves his point. He proves that
fans what love authenticity. Yeah. Like they don't like the fake.
Exactly.
I agree. I don't like drama. I'm just not a drama guy. So I kind of just wanted everybody to be nice, man. Like Care Bears.
You agree, but then you say you want everybody to be Care Bears. Screw
well,
that
I mean,
shit.
I agree that they like authenticity, but I just want everybody to be nice. And can we all be friends?
Can we
all train together?
No,
and
no. That's actually a huge problem I have with the sport now. Is everybody wants to be buddies. Give me the Carmichael Stewart where you do your own shit. Why? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to be careful passing this guy for third because I might have to ride with him next week.
Like I was wanting.
You can be buddies, but screw it. We're going racing.
You got it. Like once the helmet goes on, you got you can be as friendly as you want to your competitors off the track. But as soon as the helmet goes on, like all bets are off and like you can't hold grudges, but like it's hard not to.
You can't hold grudges, but you can't hold back. Yeah. There's a difference between being, like I said, just a raving dick on a bike and being aggressive and showing that you want there. It's a fine line to cross. Like there's an easy way to cross it, but these guys, again, you don't get to that level if you don't have this ambition and this cutthroatness.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to ask our next guest what he thinks about that. But our next guest is going to be brought to you tonight by Guts Racing. Andy Gregg and the Guts Racing crew continue to provide the best seats and foam available. If you want the same seats used by Rockstar, Husqvarna, Hep Suzuki, and many more, then you need Guts Racing. They have numerous color possibilities, staple or Velcro installation options, wing seats, and the best foam in the business with the Phantom Ultralight Seat Foam. Don't forget, they also have complete seats for the Tulare and Super 73 and covers for the Suron Segway. They strive to ship orders within 36 hours. Visit GutsRacing.com and order today. Tonight, Guts Racing brings us from Monster Energy Yamaha Star Racing, the number 23, Justin Cooper. What's up, Jay Coop?
What's going on, guys?
Not much, man. We just so you know, we got Michael Lindsay and Derek Kelly in studio, and we're excited to talk to you. How you feeling after three rounds?
Yeah, pretty good. Obviously, we've had up and down with like the whole weather situation, so it really doesn't feel like we've gotten a full three rounds in.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
Yeah, it's definitely an awkward start to the season, but yeah, it's been good, and I think we'll have some more consistency, you know, coming into these next few rounds.
Yeah, I think if you look at A1, that was a hell of a ride for you. Obviously, I think you came out of the first lap in like 20th, passed your teammate Eli Tomac and finished 8th. Incredible ride. And then you go into San Francisco and don't even make the main, which is like insane. So how do you process that in your head? Do you just kind of forget about San Francisco and move on?
Yeah, like honestly, that's the first main I've missed in my career.
Right.
So it was it was definitely weird, but you know, with what was going on there, like, it wasn't really much of a supercross race. It was kind of survival out there. So I just wasn't good in those conditions, wasn't comfortable at all. And, just kind of put it behind me. And, we went into another mudder this weekend. So,
yeah, well, hopefully,
didn't really put it too far behind me. Had to learn from it.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. And hopefully, A2 would be nice. And we'll see. We'll actually get a real supercross race this weekend.
I think we got some good weather this weekend. And, A1 was good. Weather was good there. So, good racetrack. I like that stadium. It's pretty open compared to the ones that we got coming up on the East Coast. Mm. There's a lot more room, and I feel like the track's always better. So, the dirt's good, and looking forward to this weekend for sure.
Good to hear. You got anything, Derek?
No, I mean, I'm just stoked to see Jay Coop on a 450, and then, like, you see a lot of guys. I'm just stoked that he ended up on a good spot.
Yeah, speaking of that, like, when that deal came together shortly before it, were you at all worried about getting a 450 deal? How sure were you during the middle of the season last year that you were going to be locked into Star?
I was pretty confident in the whole thing, but the more that it, like, I didn't sign until the last national. And to be honest, like, I was pretty confident in it, like, round one, round two, round three, and it kind of kept getting pushed back, and, like, there wasn't really an offer on the table. And then as the season went on, it was, like, kind of, like, I was kind of blindsided by it. I thought I had a deal pretty much locked in, but it was kind of farther than I thought, like, in hindsight. So, yeah, it definitely wasn't a for sure deal, and it was kind of tough to make happen, so. Yeah, I'm really thankful for the opportunity, and, you know, it's very nice to make the transition to the 450 class with the same team that I've kind of been around for about 7 years now. So that was important to me to have the same people that know me, know how I like my bike set up and stuff like that. So that was probably the best part about staying with the same team, especially moving to a new class. And definitely made the transition easier.
I'm curious, I'm sure this is a question most fans would have for somebody in your position, is you come into the 450 class, you're on a team you're familiar with, so that's got to be a little bit, takes down some of the stress of the transition, but at the same time, there are a lot of big names in this class. You're on an extremely successful team that has two past champions on it. There's always rumors of what's going to happen the next year, who's going to move where, when, why. For you, is it a one-year deal, a multi-year? Do they put very set things in front of you where, hey, if you do this good, you get an auto re-up? Do you have, like, a clear idea of what you have to do this year to keep performing? Or is it pretty open-ended, very, like, loose, low pressure, where, hey, we're just going to see how it goes and we'll figure it out, based on how just things go? But, again, not, do you have, like, these targets they gave you, or do you really have an idea?
Yeah, I have targets in my contract that I have a one-year deal, and if I meet any of the requirements in the contract, I will get re-signed on the spot. But those are obviously, big things. So that part is definitely, they're going to make me earn my next year for sure. And, you know, all I can really do is, you know, I've been given the opportunity. So I was in this position on a 250. I only signed for 1 year. I had to, really meet my requirements. But, it's asking a lot more in this class. Everyone is a champion in this class, and these guys don't roll over. So, it's a long season. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And, we really haven't found out where we stack up yet. I feel like we've only had A1 to really base off anything. And, just looking forward to seeing how this next month or two goes. And I think a lot of things are going to change, and a lot more is going to be known with these next few races.
Mm-hmm.
How weird is that compared to like racing 250 regional supercross? Three rounds in, you're already into a chunk of the season. You're a third of the way into the season. You know where people stack up, you know where you're at, you know what you have to do to move up a little bit. Three rounds in a 450 is a lot less. It's been super up and down. So do you ever feel like you fly home just going, okay, what have I been doing the first three rounds? Like, does any of this even matter? Like, is it just, again, you've raced 250s only, so this has to feel very different at this point to kind of not know exactly where you stand or what the season's going to play out like?
Yeah, I mean, every championship I've been in every championship hunt in the TVD class. And this year, like, I feel like I can just show up to each race and kind of do the best that I can do. And I've been trying to take an approach that is like, you know, keeping the pressure off and just pretty much taking what's given to me and, you know, just having fun with, you know, trying to do my best. So I'm not really putting any pressure on myself to go out there and be like a podium guy. Just, I'm trying to find my stride and, you know, just get used to this class, get used to the 450 and yeah, just trying not to get overwhelmed by all the races we got this year. I think we got like 31. So
yes. Yeah, that's right.
It seems like a lot, but I know they click off quick. Like we've already done three and you know, I feel like we haven't even started, but it's, they'll click off, but you just got to kind of take it one race at a time, I think, with these longer series. And yeah, the 250 class is a whole lot different. I mean, the Supercross schedule is like 9 races and they're spread out. So you never really have, you know, a time where you're going like 6 weeks in a row. It's pretty hit and miss on the schedule for the 250s. And, you know, you get a lot of downtime. You get to get on the outdoor track in between your breaks and all that. So it's just going to be something, you know, to rely on the team with and, you know, to transition into. So mm-hmm. A lot of new things for me. And really just taking it one race at a time and can't look too far ahead yet.
How's it been different? I mean, you're still on the same team, but they are a little different. Like the 450 team is technically Yamaha's, but Star's contractor run it. But there's little differences. Like I noticed Eli and I think Webb have both been staying out west where the 250 guys have to fly back every week. I'm actually not sure which schedule you're on, but does it really still feel like you almost don't even know you changed team, or do you notice the little differences in how the 450 operation runs, the way testing goes, anything like that?
Yeah, it's more corporate for sure. Like, bigger decisions can be made on the 450 side, and I feel like, yeah, it does feel like a different team. Like, I don't really have the 250 side has their people, and then the 450 side has their people. There's very few that kind of run both, and it's just a new group of people. I say that, but like, you know, the team managers and stuff have always been on the 250 side, and when, you know, they transitioned to the 450 side, they were on the 250 side before that. But, you know, now being on the 250 side since they started with Star Yamaha, the 450 team, they definitely feel like, you know, there's a little bit of a barrier in between them for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Justin, I want to ask you, coming into the season, you sort of just said that your expectations weren't obviously to go out and get podiums. You're kind of learning the system in the 450 class, but it almost felt like you were a little forgotten. Like even Supercross Live put out some posts for the 250 class and they had you in the photos with the other 250 riders. Did that bother you at all? Do you even care? Cause I do feel like you sometimes find those things and use those for motivation. Like, okay, I'm forgotten or I'm under appreciated or whatever. And you kind of like to use those things to get motivated. Did that bother you at all?
No, I don't really. I think if anything, I think it's fine. Like, I don't care about that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But, it is kind of nice to be like, you know, under the radar, like no pressure. And it's kind of a good situation for my first year, especially with two guys that are, you know, expected to win. So I don't really have that same pressure, but at the same time, I'm on the same team and, you know, I got to perform. So yeah. I think that'll come. I think my speed and everything is good. Just I really haven't been able to show much yet.
Yeah, it has been a little while since you haven't had that pressure on you. So it probably does feel like a little reprieve.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to take the positives out of it, but I don't want to get too relaxed, you know?
Sure.
I think it's a good thing to have pressure. And I've noticed if you don't put pressure on yourself, then you won't perform. So.
Yeah,
you got to be definitely disciplined, and it's a give and take.
Absolutely.
Healthy pressure is a good thing. I mean, you can't get stagnant for sure.
When I'm curious, something going from 450 to 250 in Supercross, I imagine, like anybody, you ride 250F, you tend to feel good on it easier day to day because you control the bike better, it doesn't get away from you. I feel like if you start riding 450s a lot, you kind of have those days where the bike, if you don't click, it's like more obvious. So right, it'll ride you. So in Supercross, have you noticed that at all? Just been like, oh, even like an off day on the 250 isn't as bad. You have so many, you know, 250 teammates rise or days you're on the 450 ever where you have to like keep yourself in check and just be like, okay, yeah, bad day sometimes on these things just don't go as well.
Yeah. When you do have an off day, you can't try to make it into a good day. Let's put it that way. you gotta take what's given to you with that bike, and definitely can't override it. It's a lot of bike for a Supercross track, and man, I don't know how. Like, I know my teammate rides like a fully, like, he, I guess he uses a lot of clutch, Eli, but he runs a lot of power in his bike, and that's just like a setup I wouldn't be able to, you know, run. So it's just like finding like a balance with, for me at least, with the bike. And I think we have a good setup now, and I've felt comfortable for a while now, and just had a really good off season, and yeah, just looking to carry that into the races, and just feel like I haven't had the opportunity. I mean, I got the whole shot this weekend, and I got cross-rutted and crashed the second lap, so that was a bummer. I mean, the top guys got around me really quick, and I kind of expected that, but would have liked to, you know, just hitch a ride with those guys and try to, you know, get a gap between the rest of the field, which probably would have put me in a good position come late in the main event.
Hearing you say that about the power, I know we had Webb. I remember seeing some interviews with Webb where he basically said, compared to Eli, he was asking to tone it down a little more, tone it down. Eli, of course, is in Colorado, comes out to Florida a little bit, but you and Webb are in Florida. Garrick, have you guys kind of headed the same direction on your setup, like motor package, mapping-wise, what you guys are kind of looking for out of the bike in comparison to Eli?
Yeah, I think we're both not as aggressive as his bike, but I think I'm even less aggressive. I think I have less bottom and stuff like that. Just, I don't know. I don't feel like it's necessary for a Supercross track, maybe motocross, but I think, I mean, the start 250 was way fast enough for me in Supercross, and, you know, we're on a faster bike now. So I don't see, you know, the reason for more power. We can do all the jumps. And yeah, I don't know what else you would need that power for. So just I like to make it slower and more controllable for me at least.
Me too. Are you good?
No, go.
Did you, did you lose it again?
Yeah, brain dead today.
ML's lost this question twice, Justin. Sorry.
During your
I want to ask you. So you did five, I believe, 450 races last year. Were you able to take anything away from that in those five? You know, you were kind of thrown into it. It was pretty quick. So what did you take away from it?
Yeah, I got in and got out. I definitely learned a lot, but nothing that, like, it was just learning like how the racing and track conditions were, and obviously the new riders in the class. Like, I haven't raced any of those 450 guys. I've always watched them like growing up, and you know, that was kind of like the first time actually racing those guys. So it took like a while to get used to just, you know, being on track with those guys and battling with those guys and just seeing, you know, the difference between that and the 250 riders. I feel like everyone in the 450 class is a lot more mature, calculated, and, you know, they just have been at it for a while, so they know what's going on. A lot more trust within the class, so that's definitely a good difference. And the bad difference is everyone's good.
Yeah, I was curious. You said more mature and calculated. And what we always hear when the amateurs go pro into the 250s, the biggest change is, especially if you're a star amateur, there's two or three guys at your level and everybody else is kind of pretty far behind. Then you move to the pro class and everybody's pretty close. There's a lot more guys at least close. And then is it the same sort of jump when you go to the 450s where, oh, wow, the gap is even tighter?
Yeah, exactly. It's tighter, and it's definitely it's really competitive in the in the 4VD class. I mean, when I moved up to the 2VD class, not saying it's weak by any means now, but there was so many guys. Like, I remember in my first year pro, like, the 2VD class, I felt like it was so busy, but I guess it was outdoors too when I was racing. And, mm-hmm. You know, the class comes together. But yeah, I just feel like everyone's been at it for so long in the 4VD class, and you just, everyone knows what to expect, I feel, in a way. And it's just the experience, I feel like, comes out.
Right. Okay.
I was curious, coming from the 250, you always have guys that are like, oh, I'm a better 450 guy. I'm a better 450 guy. And I feel like most guys in 250s moving up say that, and I call BS. But legitimately, based on your rides last year on the 450, it's like, okay, Jay Coop might literally be a better 450 guy. In saying that, what do you feel like you're naturally good at, or what naturally about the 450 suits you? But at the same time, what have you struggled with or has been harder to adapt to than you expected?
Supercross, just the track conditions. Like, once it gets beat up, it can get pretty tough. Like, it is just, it's so responsive, the 4VD, so it can definitely, you know, like you said, it can start riding you instead of you riding it. And I think, coming from amateurs or coming to the 4VD class, I've always been better on the 4VD. As far as amateurs goes, like, I was always winning the 450 titles, and I would get second or third in the 250 class. And I think where I'm good at on the 450 is my throttle control, and I'm always like in the meat of the power. Like, I don't over rev the bike. That was kind of the way I rode the 250, which ended up working out for me, but sometimes that thing needs to be wrung out too in order to go fast. But the 450 is kind of just throttle control, keeping it kind of lugging it's better. Mm-hmm. The bike works better. It gets less out of control, and it's a lot of power behind that bike at all times. So you really, the more control you can get out of the bike is, you know, the better off you're going to be.
No. And, watching you, obviously this is Derek, but, watching you, I always look up to your style in the 250 class. You were so smooth, and like, obviously in outdoors, you're always like one of the top qualifiers, and like, it never looks like you're really ringing it out. So I'm excited to see you on the 450 and outdoors to see how that carries over. Obviously the Star 250 was super powerful compared to the other 250s, but being on that 450, carrying over that style for you is going to be a really good thing.
Right. Yeah, I am too. It's outdoors is going to be good, I think, on the 450. That's what I've done all my riding. I've never ridden 450 on Supercross before last year, so I've always ridden 4VD outdoors, and definitely have put a lot of time in on a 4VD outdoors, so that'll be fun to get my first year under my belt there. And, you know, just excited for this whole season in general. I think it'll get better as we go, and the main thing is to stay healthy for sure.
Yeah, that's a big one, obviously, especially with the longer season, you know, with on the 450 class. Justin Cooper tonight brought to you by Guts Racing. We've mentioned a couple times tonight your two teammates, Eli Tomac, Cooper Webb. Eli kind of keeps them to himself on race day, but I'm curious if you had a chance to visit with them and talk to, you know, if they've given you any advice, any thoughts on the 450 class. You know, what's the relationship like with those guys?
Yeah, it's been like you guys said, me and Cooper have been together for quite some time now this offseason. We put a lot of laps together, and, you know, we're always on the track together, so we've learned a lot from each other, and Eli has been in Colorado, so we've seen him a couple of times, but really haven't gotten the chance to really mix it up with him and and talk to him or anything like that. So he's on a separate program. He likes it that way. He's obviously had all his success like that, and, you know, he knows what works for him. So, but as far as that goes, yeah, I really haven't been able to feed off him much. He's still trying to probably figure it out himself. He's coming off that big injury, and it's just been me and Coop, really.
At A1, when you came from 20th to pass him, did you have, like, a thought go through your head, like, oh, shit, like, how'd that happen? I came, you know, like, it seems crazy to come from 20th to pass Eli Tomac. I think he was 8th at the time. You took 8th. Was there any thought going through your head, or is it just, I'm just racing?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. Like, I saw him like halfway through, and he was kind of like the last guy I could really see, like, in striking distance, and he kept getting closer. So I knew something was up. Like, I was going good, but, like, I wasn't, like, you know, hunting down Eli Tomac good. Right. But he was definitely struggling with something. But it was still weird. Yeah, it was weird to go by him. And, yeah, it was just really clicking off my laps and, you know, didn't really get any arm pump. Was just flowing and really just took what was given to me. And, yeah, I felt like I rode good and just, like, kept a constant pace through the whole main.
Yeah, it was a really fantastic ride, man. I was really happy for you. Just a couple more questions before we let you go. We'll kind of end with some lifestyle stuff. You recently got married. How's married life?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, me and Jillian have been living together for, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years now. So, You know, nothing too different there. Just, yeah, we got married. I feel like we've been married for quite some time.
Sure.
We've been engaged for like 2 years. So, it's been good. It's, not much has changed. Like I said, it's, feels like home whenever she's around. So, yeah, I could say that's a plus.
Right on. I do want to ask you, when we got you on, we were talking about the Jason Anderson, Jet Lawrence thing. Any thoughts with upsetting Jason Anderson? Yes, that's kind of a no-no in the 450 class. I don't think that's somebody I'd want to mess with. Any thoughts?
Yeah, he's going to – it sounds like – I think I saw what Jason posted today. It sounds like he or Jet didn't apologize to him. Everyone else apologized for him.
That's what we gather. Yeah. And
yeah. That's a, sounds like it's a big no-no from Jason at that point.
Yeah.
And, he's going to want to apologize to him if he wants, to have some clean racing.
I like that response.
I guess, that a follow-up, we were joking earlier because a lot of people would say like Barsha is the person you don't want to mess with.
Yeah.
I was joking that I really think Anderson's the least person I want to mess with, 'cause I don't know if it would come back to bite me 10 rounds later
or a year later.
So I asked you that, Jacob, in the 450 class, who is the least person you would want to upset personally?
Yeah, I would think Bam Bam or him. I mean, yeah, I don't, those are definitely the top two. I'm kind of friends with, so I feel like if I got on his bad side, it would still be all right, but I think those two. Yeah, I mean, Barsha will hit you if you're good with them. I mean,
exactly.
It doesn't matter. So. Every weekend.
Yeah,
every weekend.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying though. I feel like if you upset Barsha, like he would just hit you back immediately or within a day, another race or so. That's why I'm still scared of Ando. I feel like
he
could hit you either way. So you just kind of expect it. Anderson, I swear, it could be 10 rounds later. You could just be
you could think it's good. Oh, we're good now.
Yeah, and then just duh.
Yeah. All right. Last one, man. We do this segment. It's a top five. It's always random. This week, we're doing our top five favorite snacks from you. I want to know what your favorite snack is, and I don't want like a healthy snack. I want when you're cheating. What do you go to?
I'm a big pretzel guy.
Okay.
Cheez-Its.
Those are good.
I
feel like Cheez-Its are very underrated.
Yeah.
I will have some Cheez-Its, for them. Though.
Yeah, extra toasty is my thing.
Is that a bad one? You like just open a box and it's all gone before you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Five is tough.
Oreos, well, yeah, I just want your top. I want your top. Like, what's your go-to?
I think some pizza.
Oof. You're talking ML's language right now.
I love pizza. There's no such thing as bad pizza.
Yeah. Those are good though. Yeah, those are not in your training program, but you know, you go get a podium, you get a win, go get a little slice of pizza and some pretzels. I like it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, Saturday night after a main event win, you should go chow down on some pizza. It's not gonna hurt you.
I dig it. All right, man. Justin, thank you for your time tonight. We'll see you at A2. And yeah, I wanna see better than 8th this weekend. We're back at A2. You're gonna get a better start, so I feel like that all leads to a better finish.
Hey, me and you both.
All right, man. Thank you for your time tonight. We'll talk to you this weekend.
All right. See you. All right.
See you, buddy. Justin Cooper tonight brought to you by Guts Racing. Appreciate him coming on. Before we get the Dakar champion, Ricky Brabec, on, let's talk about Ducati, ML. That was a topic you wanted to touch on. You were supposed to go this weekend. Things didn't play out in your favor. But now that you see the bike and all the hyper, like the thing looks fucking, I think it looks badass. I love that front fender. Do you regret that you didn't get to go?
Yeah, I regret it, but I'm so stoked. even just, I don't know, it's very, very different than the Triumph thing, where the Triumph thing was very quiet, even though we knew it was going for a long time, where Ducati's been the opposite. They somehow kept it very quiet till all of a sudden the last, I think it was over a year ago, the first time I heard they were going to do a dirt bike, and I thought it was a joke. I really did. It was such a rumor. Then all of a sudden, 6-7 months ago, it's like, oh my God, no, they're actually building this. They're far along. And then to show up, debuted it the way they did in full race trim, like we're going racing now, but then also announced that it's still 2 years out on production. I like it though. I like the plan they already set forth. I like how just like, hey, we're doing Italian stuff, wildcards, GPs, we're doing MXGP the year after in 25, we're doing US in 26. Already talking to teams. They admitted this weekend they're going to build a 250 as well. What I like though is the chassis definitely seems very Honda-esque. Which I think they were using one as a baseline, but the engine is super uniquely them. Desmodromic, sorry, I can't pronounce it very well. Their valve system that they're using is unique.
I heard that
to
term.
Moto.
I have no idea.
Basically, what that instead means. Of a cam actuating a bucket with a valve spring, or actuating a rock arm that then actuates a valve spring, it's basically a very unique looking cam that almost has like dual rocker arms. One actuates the valve down, and the other, once the cam hits, it pulls it back up. So there's no valve spring. So the problem with valve spring, you hit float where like the cam can hit it hard enough or fast enough or whatever that it loses control, and there's actually float between the cam and the spring, and you lose control of the valve movement. This thing's always hanging onto the valve. They basically can run close to 20,000 RPM on street bikes using systems like that, where everybody else you has to use pneumatic air pocket or packets to do it. It doesn't have valve spring resistance when you go to engage it, so their bikes are known on street for having really good torque, really good low end, because there's less resistance with the cam opening it. There is more friction because there's more parts moving, but modern day coatings have gone so good, it's pretty negligible. The one downside, that's why their engine looks so tall in the photos, though. That valve system is taller, so that's kind of one of their drawbacks. It's going to be a little bit higher mass. I got to figure out how to package it a little bit. I just think it's cool that they're very heavily electronic focused in all their street models. They're also very focused on releasing a product to the public that's very race ready. People forever have said it. I want a real trick like factory edition KTM. Mm-hmm. I think Ducati will likely offer that when they come, and they will probably have a baseline motocross bike. It'll probably still be the most expensive on the market.
So I was about to ask, they're known
12,
for being
11, 12 grand, yeah. Probably no problem on their first 450. Guarantee you they will have an R or a Corsa model, as they like to call them, or S's. The thing will be 16, 17 grand. It'll come with a bunch of trick stuff. Might even come with kit suspension, knowing them. Like, I just think it's cool. They're very unapologetically themselves, the way that brand is. So I'm excited to see it, especially because from what I've seen, they're willing to spend genuine money. So it's not only another brand coming to sport, it's going to be a brand that wants to make a big impact once they show up. I think of the brands we've had come in now, Triumph, Beta, and now Ducati. I really think Ducati will make the biggest impact when they come racing in terms of who they hire and how aggressive they are when they show up.
No, it seems like they kind of have a really set plan on what they're doing, and I'm really excited to see the MotoGP stuff start to come over to the motocross world, because they have so much more technology, it seems like. And like, it's interesting to say, like, I've never heard how the cam system works, but comparing that to a traditional motocross cam, it'll be interesting to see if there's more durability, like not only performance but durability compared to those cam springs.
Well,
like less...
I will say that's actually their downside, is it's not the system wears out, but it's very sensitive to how in spec it is. You know, we were talking about earlier, four strokes, right. You always had to adjust your valves for a long time. That's why people didn't own Ducatis, and they were very much a show bike, because you had to, the system is very hard to babysit. It's gone way better in the last 15 years or so. The bikes have gone way more reliable. They sell streetwise. But it still will be unique dirt that actually will face a challenge, as they're known to be expensive to work on. So we're
more forces with the dirt bikes landing. And
yeah, I'm kind of curious the loads. I'm curious to see how all that's affected. But to your point, like the MotoGP thing is the thing that's surprising. I'm the most excited about, because MotoGP is still making massive strides. More aerodynamics last couple years, but electronics, like they're always pushing the envelope there so much. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ducati get more aggressive with us. I think this, even though it's cool how different they went, I think it's in another sense pretty mellow for them. Like they didn't do, like they do carbon fiber frame, single side swing arm straight. They're very unapologetically themselves. I think this first bike has some of their DNA, but also not straying too far away from what we see in dirt bikes. but I wouldn't be surprised a generation or two down the road if they really try to push the envelope.
And obviously we're a few years out from the production model in the U.S. How different do you think that bike will be? Obviously we have a prototype or whatever you want to call it, and it seems to be fairly far custom along. And like it's own bike. I wonder how much different it'll
become. They said they're not going to put it into production until mid-2025, and that's the point. This is the Ducati Corsa R&D race team. This is very much a... It looks like a very finished bike, but there's a lot of sand casting parts. Like, they're willing to change things, so I also wouldn't be shocked the bike we see if it changes a decent amount by the time we get to production. I think that's cool is that they are racing in Europe mostly. They get to race for almost a year and a half with really high-level people before they have to stamp, you know, the production of this motorcycle. Yeah,
they're going
to
learn a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some rumors out there about, like, who the team, once they come to America, is going to be. Do you have, like, what are your thoughts? Who are you hearing?
I mean, there's been
Ken Roczen rumors.
Yeah, I heard the brand really would like Roczen. I think also, though, the brand is very tied into Monster Energy, MotoGP, the MXGP, the World Superbike stuff. I think that could be a conflict coming up. We'll see where that goes. Teams, I think Hep is in the running. I think potentially Phoenix could be in the running. I know that they had some interest in somebody, you know, in that organization, so I think that there's a possibility there. I think there also could be a possibility of a team that went away potentially coming back, I've heard. Any team that wants to say they have it as a done deal, I think, is full of crap based on talking to Paolo and those guys. As far as I'm aware, they have not made a decision, and I don't think they'll rush that decision. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't know for sure who that team is going to be until mid next year at the earliest. Again, then they have a whole nother year. It's not going to be U.S. Supercross till 26.
It's a long time.
Well, that'd be, they're focused on the 450. So
they did announce, now something we wondered is they hadn't said anything about 250 until they did the unveiling event, and I missed it. I don't know if it was after live stream, if they told the press there, but there was a comment that there will be a 250F, a Desmo 250F in a racing prototype trim by 2025, probably an Italian championship or in GP. So I'm excited. I really didn't know if they would go for that. Again, the packaging is really hard. I understand why they built a 450, because they could also do, they're doing a lot of adventure bike stuff, so they could do a Dakar bike out of it, which we're about to talk to the guy kind of won this year.
He's okay.
Yeah. I heard he's decent.
He's not bad in the desert. I mean, he's not me.
I'm hoping he hasn't seen Kiefer's video. I'm sure he has. Everybody has.
You want to get to him?
Yeah.
All right. Well, our next guest of the night is brought to you by FXR, which is designed by racers for racers. With industry-leading fit, finish, and performance, progression is the name of the game. With every new piece created at FXR, we push our brands to the next level to provide you with the best products possible. Used by the muck-off FXR Club MX Yamaha team, Mike Brown, Brock Tickle, Chris Kiefer, Benny Bloss, and many more. FXR has core motor roots, so visit fxrracing.com or go to your local dealership to see the complete 24 lineup, including the Helium and Revo. Tonight, FXR brings us the two-time Dakar champion, second son of Hesperia, California, Ricky Brabeck. What's up, Ricky?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so, dude, thanks for coming on. What's up, man?
I'm cutting right in on this. Yeah. I got to know, congratulations on the win, Ricky. We'll get to
that's
that.
Second important.
Did you see what happened to Jamie when he went riding the Dez with
over
your buddy
Dakar.
Kiefer? Please tell me if somebody sent you the video.
Is this the video where when you bring your buddies, your moto buddies, to a trail ride video?
Yeah, the chubby checkers one with the throwing goggles, the whole thing.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yes. Shit. I love it. Even halfway across the world, you've reached him. Good job, Jamie.
Look, man, I'm not very good in the desert, Ricky.
I saw it on Kiefer posted something about it, and I was like, oh, I got to check this out, because for one, Kiefer doesn't really do trail rides hardly ever.
Yeah.
And he actually went, so I was like, I'm going to go see what this guy's up to, because he don't reach out to me anymore.
Oh.
He asked me to ask you, not like you, how it feels to be like the second son of, you know, Hesperia and all that, because I guess he thinks he's the number one. But yeah, man, him and Aiden, we're on like a bike ride or whatever. So, hey, I think we're going to go on an easy trail ride later. Do you want to go? Sure, why not? And for me, that was not easy, Ricky. That was not easy at all.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if it was up to me, I'd still be sitting on that hill, because I didn't want to go anymore.
Friggin' Kiefer.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Well, man, congrats congrats on the second win.
Yeah.
I've followed Dakar lightly. I think a lot of guys, like, when it comes around, you watch the daily stage highlights and everything. I've been watching it for 15, 20 years now, and I will say it just keeps getting gnarlier. It seems like every year more and more OEM investment, your guys' Honda team keeps growing. The Austrian team's spraying out between all their OEMs. Like, it's not any easier to win now than it's ever been. So to, yeah, to lock it down. Congrats, man. Was this one harder than the first one or?
I mean, yeah, thank you guys again. But, out of, you know, the nine that I've done, this one was definitely the most physical one. You know, my first Dakar was in South America, and I was like, oh, man, you know, whatever. Liaisons were horrible. It was raining, and I was cold, and I didn't know what I was doing. But the riding was, like, super easy. Yeah, there was hot days, but the riding there was super simple. And, you know, we went to Saudi, and then the riding was, like, a little bit more natural. You know, it was more natural terrain, a little bit, you know, like the Mojave Desert. And then a lot of people were saying, oh, it's too easy. We need it to be more difficult, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, this year they come out with some tricks up their sleeves and they're throwing us in these rock gardens that are just endless. You know, out of 9 out of 12 days was rock gardens, you know, for 300 miles. And a lot of people were complaining, you know, like, oh, man, it's too hard. And, you know, people are paying to come do this. This isn't fun, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, now it's like, man, I told Castera, like, hey, the only thing that we can do to make this harder is just add another week to it. So we'll see what the future holds. But, yeah, this one was definitely pretty physical.
Did you feel like, for anybody who doesn't know, they hear of the National Hare and Hound Series he raced. Like, they think it's just pure desert racing here. But especially the SoCal rounds, there is a lot of rock garden sections and some nasty, nasty shit you guys race in. So did that make you feel like it threw you back a little more to your roots?
Yeah, 100%. And that's where I think I gained, you know, a lot of advantages. You know, growing up racing the Hare and Hounds, obviously, like, it trained the eye to see everything and read the terrain well. But this Dakar definitely was like a 12-day Hare and Hound because, you know, every day we were, you know, dodging rocks here and there. And, you know, obviously in the rally, you got to have, like, pit stops. You know, you can't just go 30 miles and get a splash of gas to keep racing. You have to take care of the bike for, you know, 8 hours a day before you can even hit the liaison to head back to the bivouac. And, you know, it's a big task to, you know, read the road book, get through the desert, not fall down, and take care of the bike. So, you know, it definitely paid off, you know, the Hare and Hound stuff for me to do what I did, you know, the last 2.5 weeks out there in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
No, and this is Derek here.
Derek Kelly.
Derek Kelly. So I had a question for you as far as the race management part of it. Obviously, you're out there and you grew up racing desert and Hare and Hound stuff. And how are you figuring out where you can push and how do you turn the race aspect of it? Because obviously, it's a however many day race. Like, you got to manage it. But where do you push and try to make up time on other people?
So each evening around, I would say 5:30, they kind of give a description of the next day stage. You know, obviously on a 100% scale, they give you, you know, the scale of, okay, it's going to be like 19% rocks, 30% dirt track, you know, 20% sand, you know, and each day, you know, whatever, 42% asphalt, you know, if it's a long day of highway. But each day they give you like a description of what the next day is going to have. And then, you know, obviously the percentages. So you kind of gauge that and then you gauge where your competition is starting. Obviously there's, you know, everyone in the race is a competition, but you have competition that's close by, whether you're in first or whether you're in fourth trying to battle for third, or you have a fifth place guy trying to, you know, battle you, you kind of position yourself. So if it's a day to push, obviously if you start up in the front, you don't really have a choice. You have to push because everyone's hunting you down.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you start, I would say starting first is obviously like a spot you don't want to start, but you know, you have to put your big boy britches on and sack up and do it if it happens. But if you start like 10th, you know, there's all these lines, you have 9 lines in front of you that you could follow a little bit easier and have confirmation almost on every, you know, every corner or every note in the road book. But, you know, if you start first, you don't have a choice. You have to push.
Have to navigate.
Yeah. So you start like 10th, then yeah, you can make up so much time on a single day, but the next day, you know, you're going to have to push. So there's two days in a row that you're pushing.
Interesting.
And if your competition's close to you and you start just in front of them, then you don't want him to catch you because, you know, you're going to lose 3 minutes to him. So you have to push then. Or if you start just in front of them and you want to start behind them the next day because it's going to be tricky navigation, then, you know, you kind of hold back a little bit, let him beat you, and hopefully someone else could beat you. So then you could start 6 minutes behind them and then make up 6 minutes. So
it's like more of a chess game.
Yeah, it's a race. So much strategy.
It's more or less, dude. Yeah, it's full strategy. Obviously, you know, you have to go fast here and there, but you have to gauge, you know, where your competition is, what the terrain's like, where you know you can push and where you know you probably, you know, can't push because it's not your forte of riding. So it's a big strategy. And, you know, there's risks involved. You know, some days you pull over and you wait for 3 minutes to start further back, or some days you don't wait at all and you want to start in the front. So, you know, the day after the following day, you can have a better position. It's all a game, dude.
Okay.
Nice. How much has that changed? Correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was around 3 years ago where they changed the roadbook system. They used to give them to you guys, I believe, the night before. There were some complaints that they felt like the bigger teams had a lot of advantage with map help. I think you guys get the roadbook the morning of the stage, correct?
Yeah, so before, yeah, like you said, 3 years ago, or actually it was 5 years ago, we got the roadbook in the morning, like the first year of it. But yeah, before that, they would give you the road book as soon as you get to the bivouac. So then, you know, you would get to the bivouac, you know, get your massage or whatever, your lunch, and then you start looking at the road book and kind of studying, you know, on the Google Earth or whatever, you know, map system you have. And you can kind of check out the route. You know, you could place the route on Google Earth and kind of see where you could shave corners here and there, you know, to cut off a kilometer or three. And, you know, yeah, like you said, bigger teams were doing this and, you know, no one was happy about that. So yeah, they stopped that. And then 2020, they said, okay, well, we're going to give you the road book 25 minutes before the start. And ever since then, you know, the racing has been obviously way more fair like this. So, it's a good system.
I was going to say, I think I remember it was 20 when they must have been handed to you right before then. It seemed like it went to your point, like it, I don't know if you guys were so used to pushing more, but it seemed like guys would push, win a stage, and then whoever won the stage and led out the next day would struggle so much with navigation, they'd go down 15 minutes. You guys were having like a different stage winner every day. It was a different lead out every day. It was super all over the place. Did that teach you now, like, did that really change how you have to race it again, where now you're really picking what days you want to lead out? Did that, again, all those map book changes, the rules and the way they've done that change, how you approach the race versus I just need to be the best every day. I need to actually figure out how to strategize this.
Yeah. So, before, the swings, like the time swings or like whatever the stage win swings were massive, you know, like before you would start first, like you said, you would lose. It's a given. You're going to lose 15 minutes, 10 minutes at the minimum, you know, the next day. And now it's more fair, and especially, you know, last year they gave you, they gave like the top three guys, the opening guys, like a bonus credit. And, the bonus credit was like the first guy to lead out was 1.5 seconds a kilometer. And then the second guy was 1 second. And then the third guy was 0.5 seconds. So last year, this was like a new system. So like, dude, like the top three guys literally every single day was the same top three guys because they're getting like too much credit.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
It was like, you know, everyone was mad. I mean, the top three guys weren't mad, obviously, because every day they were getting just bonus time over bonus time over bonus time. And they, next thing you know, the top three guys were minutes ahead of, you know, fourth place.
So
The guy, like, from 4th to 10th, like, dude, we're just battling for who's going to get 4th because the top three guys are gone.
Yeah.
So now this year, because we made like a big complaint about it, and we were like, dude, it's not even fair. You can see all the races, all the results is the top three guys every single day. And at the end of the week, that's the same podium as the top three guys that opened all week because the bonus credit was too much. So now they have bonus time, but it's only for the first guy. It's 1 second now, a kilometer for the first guy, which in my opinion is more fair because the guy that's leading out is doing 100% of the work creating a line for, you know, the next 100 people that are behind them. And the bonus credit now is more or less equal because if you figure like if you're starting 10th, you know, you have all the lines in front of you, you could just, if you can read the terrain and read like the tire marks, you have such a big advantage where the guy in front is literally riding at 60%, just figuring out the map to get to the finish line.
I was talking to Mark Samuels actually just this last week. I was picking his brain about the year he went and did it. And I was surprised, number one, the entry fee was so high. I think he said it's like $25,000 before, you know, any other costs. But then he was explaining to me like how much investment they've made in the racing. Like I didn't realize, you know, compared to going down to Baja to racing there, he was talking about the Bib Black, like them feeding you guys every day, having full medical staff, surgery center, having like helicopters everywhere. I guess like a lot of people think, oh man, difference between just if you're California, just going down south and racing Baja versus going halfway across the world. Do you actually feel like pretty, I guess in a sense, safe, like the way they've done everything? It seems like they think it all out pretty far ahead and try to have a lot of the necessities you guys need or try to take care of you guys pretty decent.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you said, you know, the entry fee is pretty steep. And if you're, you know, racing in California or, I mean, kind of any local series, you know, what's your entry fee? $100. And, you know, you race and you leave, but out there at Dakar, yeah, it's like $25,000. And then, you know, you need a motorhome. That's another, I don't know, whatever you can rent a motorhome for a month. And then, you know, everything costs money to get into the bivouac, but, yeah, you know, there's 15 helicopters in the sky all day long while you're racing. And there's medical, you know, in each helicopter, there's TV coverage on like, I think six helicopters is, like for TV, but there's also medical in there that can haul you away, you know, if you need.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, there's breakfast, lunch, and dinner provided. There's medical at every bivouac. Like you said, you know, there's medical staff with, you know, X-ray machines, people that can, you know, do some quick fix on you. It's crazy. The operation that goes there is just insane. So yeah, when you see the entry fee, it's steep, but I mean, you're also racing, 12 days in a row and you're getting your money's worth, you know, it's not just all $25,000 to go race for 3 hours, you know, one day and go home.
Right. Yeah. It's a hell of a, program and process to get that race done.
No, yeah.
I mean, dude, for 15 helicopters to have in the sky for 12 days. And I mean, you can crash or, you know, you don't want anyone to crash, but there's this box, like this Erie truck on our motorcycle. And, you know, there's people in France that are watching the whole time. And then there's people in the bivouac as well that are watching the whole time. And then when you press, there's three buttons, you know, and if you press for a medical one, that'll go directly to France. And then France will contact the helicopter that's like closest by to get you. And then there's the people that are in the bivouac are watching the trackers. Yeah, for medical too, but also if you tip over or you have a bike issue and you don't move within 30 seconds, like it alerts the organization, like, hey, you know, this guy's having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't move within 3 minutes, they call you on this little Erie tracker that we have on the bike and the cars as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't move within the 3 minutes, they call you. And then obviously, like, if you're really bad, you know, and your bike's not close to you and you don't answer, then they'll have a helicopter to you within 8 minutes. And then, you know, if you do answer and you need, you know, help, then yeah, they'll still be to you within 8 minutes, but if you have a problem and you answer and you're like, yeah, you know, my bike's broken, whatever, I'm stuck here, then they'll come rescue you, but it's not like an emergency. So they won't be there, you know, within 8 minutes, but it's pretty legit.
Yeah. It's impressive. I mean, yeah, it's a hell of a setup.
No. And I think they need to consider trying to bring some of that over to the score, like Baja races, because like I rode for Mark Samuels in 2018 and 2019. And obviously that was just for works in the Grand Prix series, but I had zero interest in going down to Baja, obviously. Like, you're in Baja, California, not far from the U.S., but they're, I don't know, like, I just have no desire to go down there because, like what you said, like, in Dakar, they have medical that can be there in 8 minutes, but then, obviously, this year at the 1000, they had that crash with Cade Walker, and he's lucky to be alive after what happened to him, just hearing the stories about how they couldn't get a chopper to him. They ended up having to drive him out of the back of the truck for like 8 hours over sand whoops. Like, they're just risking people's lives. And I mean, I don't know what the cost is. Obviously, $25,000 for Dakar to enter, and obviously there's more cost, but you have to figure out how to make it safer for racers, or you're just going to end up killing people.
Yeah.
You 100%. Dude, that whole thing with Kay was a terrible thing to happen. And I mean, I don't know how SCORE can operate, you know, with these guys racing, especially when they start at what, 3 a.m.
yeah
for me, that's just dumb.
Yeah, it's not safe at all. But, no
dude, that's really not smart. And I think SCORE could do a lot better for sure to keep, you know, the bike guys a lot safer, but I think that's not what they're trying to go for. You know, obviously the truck teams have a lot more money, and that's what they cater to.
Hey, Ricky, I want to ask you about, in your Instagram post, there's a number of times throughout the event where you talked about navigation problems. What do those navigation problems entail?
Dude, there's a, so yeah, in rally, we go by kilometers and not miles. And I think it's like 1.6 kilometers is a mile, basically. And obviously, you have to navigate through the desert, and you only have like that road map to do so. And it's not easy, dude, riding the bike, dodging rocks, dodging camels, trees, missing corners, and trying to read the road book.
Sure.
And, dude, at this rally, there was like 4 notes per kilometer. So it's like 4 notes less than a mile that you had to navigate just to get around or get through these canyons. And I mean, dude, you're obviously, if you start in the front, you're trying to run. Like I said, you don't want people to catch you, and you don't want to lose 10 minutes. So you're just trying to ride as fast as you can. And dude, you miss one note, next thing you know, that one note could have been crucial, or that note most likely didn't mean anything. But if it's a crucial note where you had to make a turn,
off a cliff
or go off a cliff or something that, you know, you shouldn't be there, dude, that can lead to, you know, a domino effect of issues. You know, you miss the corner, so next thing you know, you're still ripping, and next thing you know, you're 6 to 10 kilometers away looking for the next corner, and now that you miss that note, you miss that corner, now you have to backtrack, and the next thing you know, that's 6 minutes right there that you just lost. So you have to really be on top of your game on, you know, navigating and making sure you don't miss a note. But dude, it happens so fast that it happens. Like you're trying to race as fast as you can, navigate, and be sure that no one catches you. And, you know, if you're not focused, dude, it happens more often than not.
Yeah, I guess the only piece with that is that, you know, everybody's having the same problem at some point, pretty much. So, yeah, you know, maybe you don't freak out too much.
Yeah, no, dude, everyone has a mistake. You know, my girlfriend, she raced, you know, this is her first Dakar. She was doing good and, you know, had some issues on stage 11. And then she was like super bummed. But I'm like, hey, this is 9 years for me and I still make mistakes. Don't be bummed that you had a mistake on one day.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was curious with the program differences now. So for a long time, the KTM group dominated this event. Honda came in a few years ago, spent a while now with John Campbell to originally develop a program and a bike. And then they started investing more and more, getting more guys. And now you guys have kind of the little bit more dominant operation at this point. What are some of the advantages? Like, you looking at how the Honda team, whether it's the bike, the way you guys set up, you guys strategize or whatever, that you think you guys have over your competition right now? And what are some of the other things that still, like, maybe the KTM group is doing good? Is there things that their bike does better than yours, or that their crew is better at?
So, yeah, you know, you have, what was like four riders, and the KTM was, you know, six. So we were kind of outnumbered.
Mm.
But now that we're more or less equal to KTM, I mean, this year we're not equal because KTM had some riders get injured and couldn't make it. But, you know, the more Honda riders or whatever, KTM, Gas Gas, Husqvarna, Hero, the more riders you have, it makes things a little bit easier for, like, that chess game that you're talking about, you know, because if you have a favored rider on one team that's doing better or in a position to win, then you can tell your other riders, like, hey, you need to maybe place yourself here, place yourself there, you know, to help, you know, this rider on the next day. So if you have one rider doing really good, but then you have, you know, you don't want that rider to open the next day, you would try to tell another teammate, like, hey, push to catch so-and-so, so that way he opens the stage and kind of protects you, so that way you guys can ride together and navigate together instead of navigate by yourself and then go and make that 10-kilometer mistake and miss 6 minutes, basically.
Right.
Again, for, like, just the general fan that doesn't know a lot about that, hearing all that, how did Ross Branch hang on to the lead so much this year? I thought he had a very impressive rally early on. Was he just really consistent day to day? He's a little bit older than a lot of you guys that are competing against him. Hero doesn't also have a very large team or a lot of other big names with him. Was his navigation just really on point? Was his just day to day results? He was, you know, not leading out a lot of days, but he just was really consistent, wasn't losing time. Or
so Ross had a good prologue, which determined his start position for stage one, which he started, you know, I think like 15th or 16th on day one. And day one, you know, you never really want to start first because you don't know how the road book is. You don't know how they're going to make the road book, you know, like how difficult they're going to make it. So it's better to start in the back to kind of, you know, get a feel for it before you just jump right into the front. And, yeah, the first day Ross was doing really well. And then one of our riders actually crashed. So he had to stay with our rider for a couple minutes, I think like 15 minutes or something. And then in that 15 minutes, obviously, you know, multiple guys passed him, you know, burning in the line a little bit more.
Mm.
So once he got going again, the line was more burned in than where he actually was. So it helped him, you know, get to the finish of the stage because he could ride a lot faster and read the tire marks and like read where everyone was going. And then they gave him his time back. So that kind of, you know, bumped him up a lot just on the first day.
Oh yeah.
And then ever since that first day, you know, he ended up winning the stage on day one. And then I was second. So on the second day I caught him at like kilometer 40, and then me and him just opened the whole day. And then finally my teammate, Nacho from Chile, caught up to us. So then it was three of us.
Sick name.
Yeah. Nacho.
Nacho from Chile.
Yeah. Nacho. Yeah,
does he have nachos in his chili?
He doesn't even like nachos, dude.
I'm about to say, that's you guys spend enough time with each other. You would have figured that out by now.
But after that first day, he just, you know, on the second day, me and Ross both lost time. But he always, I mean, yeah, he rode really well, but the way he was riding and navigating always put Ross in the middle of like us and KTM. So yeah, he didn't win any more stages, but he was always top five. So he was always in the mix, not having to push too hard, but always having people around him to to kind of help him, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it just took you guys most of the rally to kind of needle down that lead from the very beginning, just picking away at it.
Oh, dude, it was so stressful. Like 3 days, it was like 1 second apart.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It was like 1 second apart, and then it was 7 seconds. Man, this is, I was telling Johnny, I'm like, dude, this is the most stressful race I've ever done in my life.
Ricky Brayback brought to you by FXR tonight. I've got two more for you. First of all, Chris Kiefer just sent a text and said, as a high Dez guy, high Dez is proud of you. So, yeah, he wanted to tell you that. And he and I've been at his house for like a month, and we were watching the San Francisco Supercross with all the mud. And he mentioned a guy like a Cody Cooper or probably a Ricky Brayback might be able to go out and win something like that with those conditions. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of that. What do you think your results could be in just a full-on mudder on a Supercross track like that?
Absolutely dead last.
Okay. I mean, you don't have to jump much. There was a whole lot of rolling going on.
I hate the mud.
Yeah. Well,
every time I crash my rally bike, dude, it's muddy.
Yeah. He was specifically talking about Cody Webb, but I wanted to see what you thought. So, all right, dead last. Not great.
Well, no, dead last for me, dude. Cody's got long outriggers. I don't know.
My other question is, Dakar being such a an amazing event and historical event, is there another event that's on your bucket list that you have not got to do yet that you would like to compete in?
That's a tough question, dude. I don't know. It's day by day for me. I think Dakar would be super sick to go back and race in the Mali Moto, you know, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, those guys are tough.
Mali Moto is the self-supported, right? Like working on your own bike, your own, like the whole nine yards, right?
Yeah, dude, the cheapest way you could do rally, like set up your tent every night. Dude, you have one parts box. It looks brutal, dude, but I think that would be a bucket list just because it's that gnarly.
Ooh. I'm out.
I'm yeah, curious, dude. Now that you've been doing this for a couple of years, you've got your two wins under your belt. When I think of Dakar, I think of a lot of South American riders. We see Benjamin, we see some of the French beach racers in it, Middle Eastern riders. How big of an effect have you noticed that you've had on Americans wanting to get into rally? I mean, do you have kids basically come up to you and ask, like, how do I do what you do? How do I get to that point?
Yeah, I mean, people are definitely interested, and, you know, I think it's really cool. The hardest part, I would say, to answer is, you know, they of course ask, you know, how do I get there, for one,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, yeah, you can want to get there. But then the second question is like, well, how much does it cost? And now you have to explain. Okay, well, you need to raise like $100,000 if you want to get there and have a nice rally.
Yeah. I was talking to Mark Samuels about this a while back. So he did his in 2019. I think he told me, like, you know, he still had help from Honda on a loaner bike, but just for entry, travel, motorhome, paying to have the bike prepped, bibs, mousses. He said he was in the thing like $65,000, and that's without a bike. He got a bike loaned to him due to his, you know, his prior relationship with Honda. Like, you, your first year, were you, based on your success with Honda, were you, you know, given your opportunity, or did you have to pay your way your first year and have to raise some cash?
So my first year, I was contracted by Honda, so it cost me nothing to get to my first Dakar. But to get to my, I think, three championship races before Dakar. So in 2015, I did Abu Dhabi Desert Challenge, and then I did Ruta 40 in South America, and then I did Morocco Desert Challenge in Africa. And the Abu Dhabi Desert Challenge and the Ruta 40, everything was paid for. I just had to pay for flights. And then after these two rounds, I had a Honda contract, and I was basically on the team. And then I had a Honda contract for Morocco and Dakar. And then they said, okay, well, after Dakar, we'll see how it goes and then we'll talk. And then my first Dakar finished ninth. And like a month later, they contacted me and asked, you know, if it's something I want to do. And I just replied, like, yeah, this is awesome. And they presented me a contract. And ever since then, I've been, yeah, loyal to Honda and been with them.
Nice. What else does your schedule look like for the year? So everybody, the Dakar course is the big hit for the year. It grabs the eyes. It grabs the attention. It's the one you want to win the most. But there's also the World Rally Championship side of things. How many more venues do you race a year? How many more events? And also, does your results from Dakar pay into that championship? Or is Dakar its own separate race in terms of the World Championship for the year?
So, yeah, Dakar before last year was like its own event, its own championship. You know, you win Dakar, you run number one in Dakar.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since last year, it's part of a 5-race championship now. And there's points. So the Dakar is worth like double points. And then every other round is like 25 points or 28 points for a win. And, for the remainder of the year, I think we're going to do the World Championship. Just that's the contract, and then we'll see where we're at the end of the year. But yeah, I think just for now, ride rally bikes and follow the championship.
Pretty amazing feat, Ricky, and we're very proud of you. You got any other questions, Derek?
No, obviously I haven't followed Dakar very much, but I mean, maybe further on in my career, I might try to pursue that. It sounds like a lot of
hell.
Fun. And, I mean, obviously, I've done some works racing, and it sounds quite a bit different than that. Obviously, I got away from works racing
yeah.
and ran back to Supercross where it's watered, but if it's you're...
yeah, there's some issues with some works races and some watering. Dude,
dodging dust and rocks and other riders out there, that was
I'd really, have to bring a lot of goggles.
Dude, it was not my cup of tea. Because I'd
throw most of them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's Dakar well, sounds really fun, and hopefully one day I can experience
hell yeah.
it.
The thing with Dakar is, like, the first 10 riders start 3 minutes apart. So, dude, you can ride 8 hours a day, dude, not see anyone.
That's awesome.
So it gets pretty, like, if you don't have like the fight in you to try to catch someone and ride with someone, then you're riding by yourself all day. And then next thing you know, you're like, man, you're just out there all day. And you're like, man, I don't know if I'm going fast enough or I'm going slow enough.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to judge, you know, but then once you hit the sand dunes, you can catch the guy in front of you pretty quick. And then next thing you know, in the sand dunes, you're in a group of 5 people riding in these big ass sand dunes.
Well, I was about to ask about that. I was reading about the chrono stage, I guess, which is like 48 hours of sand dunes. To me, that seems like you just get almost blindness. You just lose track of where you are, but you're saying it's probably the easier section.
Absolutely not, dude. It was like 500 miles of sand dunes.
Okay. So it is just kind of like, I feel like that would play with your mind.
Yeah, it all looks the same. Being up and down for 2 days.
I just and don't understand.
The chrono stage was difficult because these different camps that you could stop at in the evening time. But if you stopped at, we started at 7:30 in the morning, but if you stopped at like say 1 p.m. then you would get 3 hours of penalty basically on your time card, because you had to ride from 7:30 in the morning to 4 p.m. and if you stopped at like 3 p.m. your clock still runs until 4, so you know there was only I think there was like 10 people that made it to the last camp, and that was it. Everyone else only made it, you know, 3/4 of the way, and we made it damn near to the end. The next day, we only had 90 kilometers to ride, but everyone else had like 160.
Oof. It's insane. I just insane.
What if you had a kid come up to you, other than us talking about like the expense to do and getting ready for it? Like, if somebody came up to you pretty young and said, like, what should I race or do to get me best prepared for? What type of riding should I do? What would you recommend somebody that young that has this aspiration of doing what you're doing, what here in the U.S. would get them the best prepared to go race Dakar?
So there's a nice training facility in Pahrump. Jimmy Lewis runs this, and that's where I go throughout the whole year. And then obviously you need a bike with a big tank, and then you can kind of makeshift your own digital road book on your bike just with an iPad basically. And then on the iPad there's an app called Rally Blitz that has an Odo, a compass, and then you could download a road book into there. And then they have like Bluetooth buttons that'll change, you know, the map, you know, when you clear the note, you can push next basically. That would be the most basic start if you had a bike, you know, with whatever, a 4 gallon tank that could do 100 miles, and then, an iPad that you mount to your handlebars just to go out there and do some training in the desert. And then when you're confident and comfortable doing this, you can go to a local race down there in Mexico in Sonora. It's called Sonora Rally. And this event, in my opinion, is the most affordable, funnest rally events that you could drive to, race, and then drive home. Like it's that good. It's super fun, super good terrain, really nice people. It's affordable and it's close-ish to home.
Well, once again, Ricky, congratulations on another championship at another win at Dakar. Dakar. I'm saying it wrong, I guess. Listen, you said
Dakar.
Dakar. incredible feat. And yeah, really proud of you for doing it. Thanks for coming on tonight, man. It's an honor to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. I'm looking forward to what's next.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Saturday at Supercross, Mathis mentioned maybe getting you on Pulp. And I said, no, man, too late. I've already reached out. You cannot have him. So I didn't think he would honor it, but he did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Well, we're proud of you, man. And yeah, good luck with the next event, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you guys. Have a good night.
All right, see you, buddy.
See you, bye.
That's Ricky Brabeck, brought to you tonight by FXR. I just don't get it, man. Like, I guess because I'm just not used to that type of riding. Clearly, I'm not any good at it, if you guys, you know that. And I just can't imagine doing what those guys
do. I want to do it so bad.
Yeah,
we'll
lock it down.
You heard him. You gotta yeah. Get an iPad, strap it onto this.
I'm all about it. It's one of those things I look at as a bucket lister. Like, I would love to one. This is, sounds though, it's one of those things you say, but you got to act on it. Doing ISD on a club team would be sick, but I think Dakar would be such an adventure. It looks so badass.
Yeah, it sounds
pretty
awesome.
Expensive though. I guess that's why people with money do it.
But yeah, exactly. Let's roll into the X-Brand Forum check-in. X-Brand is your choice for clear vision and a leader in motocross and off-road goggles. X-Brand is used by many of the top GNCC riders, including the 2023 XC1 champion Craig DeLong, the 2023 National Hare and Hound champ, XC1 champion Dalton Shuri, 2021 AMA National Enduro champion Grant Baylor, also Lyndon Snodgrass, as well as motocross, supercross, and arena cross riders like Kyle Chisholm, Freddie Norn, Henry Miller, Michael Hicks, Richard Taylor, Jerry Robin, and more. Visit eksbrand.com or go to your local dealership and ask for X-Brand, distributed through WPS. And don't forget, Hunter Lawrence, the Alpine Star goggles, those are X-Brand. The Club MX goggles, the FXR goggles, those are X-Brand.
The factory ride
with different straps, but they are trusted by many of the top riders. Tonight, the X-Brand Forum check-in, there was a post on the forum about moto journalism, and it kind of led into some other conversations that ML and I were having, Lewis and I were having. ML, I'm going to let you start this off because this is kind of your idea to get away from the forum check-in a little bit and kind of have a different topic, but still sort of the same topic.
I just think like it's always interesting because we always get the comments like about real journalism in our sport. And I always say this as a response. I never claim to be a journalist. I am a content creator. We dabble in doing true journalism when we can. The sport's interesting because one thing I continue to say to people over and over, I don't personally worry too much about the being buddies with guys. Say I go on rants, playing time on podcasts, I get in trouble. It is what it is. I don't care too much at the end of the day. I like, part of my job is saying what I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that always kind of hoses, like the thing that stands out to me that's the most frustrating is how our sport treats the interaction between riders and media in terms of if we're talking about MotoGP, we're talking about F1, all the drivers or riders in those series or athletes are required to do a minimum amount of media per weekend, whether it's on press days, in between races, or certain like media pens that are set up and stuff. And our sport's moving towards that. We've tried doing the scrum system. We've tried kind of having these media pen days. But at the end of the day, nobody is required to do anything. All these other sports, there are financial penalties to the athletes for not participating in media. In our sport, it's a total choice of the athlete. Because I see, Bill, oh, you guys need to hang these people by the fire and ask them those questions. Good luck. I can't even get to them. It's not that I don't go to them and try to play. I literally can't even have the conversations. Mm-hmm. Example, what happened with Jason and Jet there, I walked by the Honda rig, and before I could even ask the words, they're like, we're not doing interviews.
Good tonight. Luck.
We're not doing interviews.
Lewis and I were told that in the elevator leaving the press box.
Literally, it's not happening. It's not happening. And they can do that. The only real requirements on our sport, and they're pretty loose, is if you participate in press day, you're supposed to press. But as we ran into last year, Lawrence Clamp actually was not doing interviews on press day, and Feld, I think, had a conversation like, hey, that's part of doing
that's
press day.
That's why you're
day. Here. Still today. Then, even the way it is, the guys are down on the bikes. Like, there's still guys that try to – they'll go start walking around, track walk, and try to get away from us. Like, they
leave
still
their helmets on.
Do everything possible to get away from it if they want to. And then even you would think the press conference is required, and not really in Supercross that's happened, but more in outdoors is we've also had athletes just – top three guys not even show up for the post-race press conference. They're out. They just decide.
Trying to catch a plane.
I got to catch a plane, man. They just don't even show up. Again, if this was other sports, there would be requirements. It'd be nice if there was actually a place where they forcefully had to talk to us where, hell, there's plenty of times I think a lot of people also get wrong. Like, oh, you need to ask this person. They could probably tell me to go F myself and just say no comment. But we don't even have the opportunity to put them in the position to give me no comment. Mm-hmm. I don't even have that opportunity, actually. They're just flat out refusal to speak. And until that changes, I remember having a conversation with somebody I felt last year where my comment was, there is a box, because there's a lot of regulations on us media. Like, they don't want us going by the trucks to try to interview people after the race. They don't want us interviewing at certain times throughout the day without team confirmations, all this other stuff. So I'm like, okay, here's a box. Media is in the box. There are no windows on the box. There are no doors on the box. Everybody I want to speak to is on the outside of the box. I can't do anything about it. I can't get to them.
Well,
I'm in the box by myself.
I know we don't want to get too deep into this, but like you talked about, like some people say, oh, you're trying to be buddies with these guys as journalism, the listeners or the people I don't really necessarily know. They're like, oh, well, the journalists are trying to be buddies with these guys. Well, yes and no. It's a small industry, so you do hang out with some of these people. So maybe you do become friends with these guys. But that also helps you to be able to talk to these guys sometimes when maybe they don't want to talk to you, but because your buddies, they will. So there is a fine line that we're trying to walk. Yeah, we're trying to do a professional job, but I mean, what you say is correct. There's a lot of times they just won't talk to us. I remember trying to interview Chad Reed my first year doing this at Press Day in St. Louis. And he's like, yeah, I'm not doing interviews. And I was like, what do you mean you're not doing interviews on Press Day? Like, why are you here then?
Yeah.
I want to ride the track.
Yeah.
Dude. I mean, that's
Derek,
the bottom line. Like,
as a privateer or, you know, a guy on a smaller team, like, I'm sure you're dying to do press because it gets name out and it gets people to notice
not
you more.
Not only that, but I mean, we'll do anything to get that extra time on the track, whether that be for, they do some outdoor presses and they do like Supercross, obviously, but there's a lot of rules. Like, obviously, I'm just kind of going a different direction with this,
that's
but
fine.
Like, as a privateer looking in the AMA and all the regulators, they say, all right, every team gets 3 press days. All right, well, why are the same riders out there every single weekend and they're not doing press and they're not doing the stuff that they're supposed to be? I think that there needs to be, if you want to have rules from Feld standpoint, from AMA standpoint, you have to enforce the rules for everybody. You can't just selectively say, all right, the privateer teams, you only get 2 or 3 if you're lucky. And then you have to do the press days, but then the factory guys, they get every weekend, they get to go out there, they do their 220s and call it good. But then, like you guys say, they won't answer questions and everything like that. I don't think it's right.
Yeah, I agree. It's
a different point of view.
There's just not a lot of consequence. Like I said, there's a lot more consequence on me than there is the rider, which is very opposite in our sports. There's very heavy penalties. And of course, to your point, Dark, like one big one is, the difference also in our sport versus like a basketball or baseball, there is a lot more separation between the media and the athletes and the teams. In our sport, it is a lot less.
But yeah, we have an opportunity to be closer because it's so much smaller.
It is so much smaller, which has its bonuses. I mean, the fact that we do podcast shows like this and we can readily get so many athletes on it, there is bonuses to it, being able to see, get more of an inside line on some of the guys' personalities, learn more info. One of the ones that always kind of strikes me as weird, and I think me, Lewis, have had this conversation, I probably have with you, and a lot of us seem to have the same baseline of how we go about certain info, because some people go, oh, why didn't you say said rider was hurt? Well, because said rider told me he was hurt, or his mechanic, and there's a certain point where you basically, I always go off of, if I get the first-hand information and I'm told literally not to say it, then I don't say it. Mm-hmm. I wait until I hear it from another. Once it's basically gotten to somebody else, like I have another agent or mechanic or rider call me, go, hey, I heard such and such crashed it. I'm like, okay, it's getting out. Like, I can kind of run with this now. Like, that kind of just ends up happening. But a lot of times, literally, the way we get the info is from the source, and they literally look at you and go, don't say anything. You're like,
yeah, and if what you, do I do? If you burn that source, well, they may never talk to you again, right?
And,
if you
and
burn
enough sources. Because there's stuff you need throughout the year. Yeah. So, yes, there is a...
There's a give and take.
Yes, there is. There's very much a give and take, and you feed people stuff to get stuff. So, but it all works out. It's like, a lot of times, too, I look at stuff. Is there stuff worth reporting on, like a minor injury, something with a rider? I'm like, okay, yeah, I found this out first.
Derek Kelly stubbed his toe today.
I know that okay. This is going to hit the public within the next 2 days because we're coming up to a race. I'll probably hear about it tomorrow and I can run it or something, but I'm not going to be the person to break the trust because I'm going to need some. I need to get more info because eventually there's going to be something I'm going to need to break mm-hmm. on time. Like, and it, you kind of have to weigh of what's really worth it versus what's, you know, really going to be the big story that you can work on.
Sure.
And if you want to say, oh, other sports, you know, bullshit, every sport does that. Anybody I've talked to that works as a journalist or a sport keep certain things to themselves based on how they earn the information, and they use it to pivot to get other stuff. It's part of the job. It really is. If it's not part of the job to just turn around and regurgitate every single thing you hear.
Right.
Well, it just turns into a gossip mill and rumor mill. Yeah. But like, that's one thing I don't really understand. Like, as a racer, I thankfully haven't been injured much in the last few years since I turned pro, but like, I don't get the whole point of keeping it a secret. If you're going to be hurt and you know you're hurt, yeah, and you're going to be out for a few rounds, why not just announce exactly what you're hurt? Instead of, people are going to talk about it, people have heard,
yeah,
where they tell you, you tell somebody on the low or whatever, and then it just becomes something that it's not. Why wouldn't you want to have the correct information out there from yourself, the source? Just put it out there. Let it be, yeah. Let people talk about it, but at least they're talking about the right thing instead of something that didn't even happen.
Your team manager told me not to tell people you were hurt.
That's fine. That's just the stigma. That's the stigma.
And I remember asking, like, what does it matter? Well, got to keep on the down low. I'm like, what does it matter? He's hurt. He's not making the opening round.
Well, probably because everybody else keeps on the down low. It's right. The stigma of motocross. But, like, if you ask me, I'll be straight up. Like, I don't really care. Like,
yeah,
if somebody wants to know I'm hurt, I'm hurt. Like, I've been out. Like, a lot of times when I don't post anything, it's because I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I got hurt in November. I didn't know what time I'm going to be back. I was still dealing with it, and obviously I'm still dealing with it.
Yeah, I think that's – and I get it because riders don't keep it, but at the same time, like, we hear, like, guys get actually so hurt throughout the years randomly. I wish most guys would just come out and say, like, yeah, guess what? I tore a ligament in my thumb this week. I'm doing this. I'm dealing – you hear it, like, weeks – one of them we were laughing last year was Colt Nichols started out Supercross season great and then had a couple bad rounds. And randomly on press day, like round four in, he goes, yeah, it's been really tough the last 2 weeks. I tore my groin, my hip right. after like 3 weeks. Yeah. And I can't even ride during the week. And I'm sitting there looking at him. I'm like, wait, you did this 3 weeks ago and I've been trying to figure out why you've been riding so terrible the last 2 weeks. And I went back, he'd never mentioned
No. Yeah, like, and if he had told us that, then you'd be like, oh, well, that makes sense. Now we know. Yeah. Now we're not like, well, Colt
went from being sixth at round one to like 14th the next round. Yeah. And I'm going, wow, maybe that was just a fluke. Instead of going back, you know, Colt had an amazing round one, but he's barely able to ride. He's pretty much riding on, as he said to me, I'm pretty much riding on one leg.
No, and that's funny because like, I also had a similar thing last year where I fractured my thumb. I didn't tell anybody about it. And it's almost as a racer, you're like, you don't want to put yourself an excuse because you're still riding. Like, you're still out there. You're still dropping the gate. You're still racing with everybody. But, yeah, it is a big thing that maybe we should consider it as
and,
a
and
as
I get that because where I was saying they're like, oh, I'm just making excuse. My thing is always, if it's a legit injury, it's a legit injury. Yeah, like, I would respect, like, kind of the thing. It would be messed up if they had a rolling thing for the TV broadcast that showed names and when they've been hurt. Like, it would literally be every main event. Half the main event would have an injury report from the last 3 weeks of something they've done. Hey, this guy's, you know, got a small tear in his ACL. This guy dislocated a shoulder 4 weeks ago. This guy got a concussion 5 weeks ago. That guy is riding with a fractured thumb. That guy's, what is it? If some guys you compress, like, you can fracture the top of your tib and fibrum from compressing it hard. Like, little stuff like
break
that.
Your back, like, the little spines.
Hey, this
on your
two of these, two of these guys are riding with literally displaced discs right now.
Yeah,
maybe that wouldn't look great for the sport in general. All the little kids, right? Well, so, mommy, I want to be one of them. I want to be one of them.
Anything else on this topic?
No, I think that's about it. My rant is just the end of my rant is we're trying, people. I want the dang athletes and the teams to have some freaking consequence because I can't.
Sure.
I repeat my analogy. I am in a box. It has no windows, no doors. Everybody I want to talk to is outside the box. I can only talk to them if they come inside the box with me. Oh, that sounded wrong.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Did you hear my question? Did you hear my question to Cooper Webb in the press conference? Because it got laughs from AP and I didn't realize it. I said it looked like you were coming on strong at the end or something like that. I didn't even notice. I was just asking, you know, and then I guess AP like put his head down and
started laughing.
I didn't even notice that. Like somebody had to tell me like he was cracking up and I had to go back and watch it.
Coming on strong.
Anyway, before we moved to the troll training top five, we were talking about injuries. You had an arm injury early in the season. You haven't got the race. Where are you at? How's the recovery coming? We were talking off air a little bit, but what do you want to tell us?
Yeah, I mean, it's
Derek Kelly.
Yeah. Derek Hillier. It's a huge bummer. Like I really had high hopes for this year and I got hurt November 8th. I had surgery November 9th. And long story short, they didn't do a very good job putting it back together. So I ended up going out about 2 weeks ago tomorrow. I went up to Vail, Colorado to the Stedman Clinic. Those guys are awesome. They got me in right away and they had to do basically a full restart, pull the plates out, screw me back up, do a bone graft out of my leg because it was not healing. It wasn't aligned right, had the wrong plates in it, and basically starting from ground zero as of 2 weeks ago. So
that sucks.
Yeah, kind of threw a wrench in my Supercross program. But, you know, everybody keeps saying, like you said before the show, that everything happens for a reason.
To hope so.
About tired of hearing it.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
But, no, I just hope that I come back strong. Obviously, I got a great team around me. My trainer, Evan Nystrom, with Outlier Performance or Outlier Athlete, and other people that are just helping me get to where I need to be. And just, you know, even though I'm off the bike, I'm still putting in work, and hopefully I come out strong.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you back. You mentioned hopefully you can do some maybe 450 Supercross towards the end of the season, and then 450 outdoors is the plan.
Yeah, that's the plan. Obviously, like 450 Supercross is just kind of a rough, like maybe it's a good idea because I'm going to be doing outdoors and super motocross on a 450. But, you know, it day by day.
Sure.
Like, so I feel like every time I go back to a doctor or I get another checkup, it's something new. And just one thing after another, like I'm battling with this infection. I got to take antibiotics and who knows how that's going to go. So, I mean, if I'm lucky, I'll be on a bike at some point.
Hope to have you back. Yeah,
I hope so.
Yeah,
Jesus.
No kidding.
That's dark.
Well, hopefully we'll see you back. Yeah, I was really looking forward to seeing how you're going to do this year because you've improved every year. Last year was amazing for you, and it just gets better. And of course, the AEO Power Sports KTM team every year gets a little better. Jeremy's just putting more and more into the team.
Definitely.
So, yeah, we'll look for good things in outdoors for you.
No, it'll be good. I'll be back. Like, you can't let stuff keep you down, and just got to come back strong.
Absolutely. All right. I was going to say,
guess what the entire chat wants to know?
Date life?
Yeah, it's somebody even put – even Ricky Brayback probably wants to know about your date. It was just – I just went back and scrolled.
Yeah, Steve Mathis said last night that I was going to talk about it, and I never agreed to that. She's actually listening. I'm not – yeah, we can have a quick update at the end. Keep listening.
Okay. The other one is my hoodie is ADTR.
A day to remember?
Yeah, day to remember. Somebody put, is it a dick to ride? I was very disappointed when I just read that.
A day to remember, man. That's Daniel Blair's favorite band.
My favorite band,
too. Yeah, yeah. Day to remember. Killer band. Yeah, we'll do a quick date update here in a little bit, unless she texts me and says no.
A date to remember?
A date to remember. Well, yeah. It's,
there we go.
Yeah, they were. They were, actually. Trail training, top fives. Riders such as Grant Harlan, Jeremy Martin, Henry Miller, and Jason Anderson all trust Troll Training, also myself. Troll Training is the culmination of a combined...
What? I was just athletes everywhere.
After you know better than to mess with me while I'm doing a read. It's difficult enough for me to get through it as it is. Troll training is a culmination of a combined 3 decades spent in the trenches of the professional sports scene, refining training methods, learning, absorbing, and training alongside some of the best in the business. Alex Martin and John Wessling have expert guidance in helping you navigate the many nuances of training, including periodization, endurance, strength, and conditioning, riding technique, on-the-bike structure, nutrition, and more. Troll Training works for me. Trolltraining.com. Go check out all the different options they have to offer. We are also giving away a few single free months for our winners of the Vital MX Fantasy Group. This week's winner, which is Roger Gould. He won for San Diego, and he's going to get a free month of Troll Training. Try that out. So if you're not on the Vital MX Fantasy League and in the Moto X Pod Show League, you need to get in there. Lots of cool prizes, X-Brand goggles, some race tech giveaways. We're really enjoying it. So, yeah, join the league. Derek, I know you're not a huge fantasy guy. We've joked about it over the years because I always tell you, I pick you, you better do well, and you're like, yeah, I don't really give a shit. fantasy is cool. So this week's Troll Training Top 5 was Top 5 Snacks. If you guys want to get involved with this, MotoXPodShow@gmail.com. Next week's going to be your top 5 action movies. So, top 5 favorite snacks. ML, you want to go first?
I wish you would tell me these top 5s before
did I
the
not?
Show.
Jesus, no, dude, this is like
he was running around.
This is like 3 or 4. Stuff. Yeah, but I could have told him days ago.
I mean, yeah, it's like 3 or 4 you know shows. What? I find out the top 5s are when the show starts.
Probably the reason I don't is because you're on the show, and I'm like, I just said what next week's is, so I'm assuming you remember. That's
no,
on
I'm
me.
Not going to remember.
Okay, I'll do mine first, and ahead. I have TJ and Scotty, so to give you a few minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
Mine, and this is difficult because I just love snacks, and I've cut a lot of these out, but I'm going to go Kit Kats, hot fries. Tim Tams, Oreo, the white chocolate Oreos, and white chocolate pretzels. Those are going to be my top fives. Scotty, are you trying to read my scribbly writing?
I can't.
Dude, it's so bad. I do this while I'm driving and shit. Scotty said popcorn, salt and vinegar chips, cheese sticks, Reese's, which I'm going to assume is peanut butter cups. I don't know. It could be Reese's Pieces. Don't know. And queso fries. And that made me really hungry. And TJ's are gummy bears, Twix, churros, Reese's again, and cake, any kind of cake. I also, if I'm not mistaken, I might have one on. Here we go. So one of our listeners, Cart63, said gummy bears, buffalo blue cheese combos, beef jerky, peanut butter pretzel bites, and Sour Patch Kids. And I actually think I wrote Scotty's in reverse or order, but whatever. I know you're a professional athlete, so no, yours are all probably like apples and oranges.
Well, I had to change my whole diet because I did a bunch of blood tests and stuff, so
yeah?
I can't even have good snacks anymore.
Oh, but damn. What would they have been then? What would your go-to be?
Honestly, I'm a good boy.
That's boring.
Yeah.
That way you tell your girlfriend.
So I tell everybody. I think I'll just go what I have right now because I'm going to pivot from your guys'... unhealthy snacks.
Okay.
But I think one,
like
dried one thing
mango.
I can't even have that.
What?
Wow.
Dried fruits off limits.
Jeez.
So right now, one of my favorite snacks is plantain chips.
What the hell's that?
It's a sister fruit or a cousin fruit to a banana.
Okay.
And they chop it up and put...
I'm so bored right
Himalayan's,
now.
Yeah. Show bored as you want.
Can you put those in chocolate? Can you dip them?
I'm sure you can. Dip anything.
Yeah, you can.
People want you to dip the dog. It's all in the comment section again.
I'm sure it is. Okay, that's your main one? You got any others?
Beef sticks, like all
okay.
organic beef
yeah.
sticks, like that kind of stuff.
And do those taste anything like the Wageman Brothers beef jerky? Are they do they taste the same? Because when
they
you
don't
get
to have teriyaki sauce and hot buffalo sauce, it's just like salt and pepper.
Okay,
and
that still sounds pretty stuff. Good.
It's delicious. Like organic beef sticks are underrated compared to like I don't know like what's the main jerky brand that's like?
Well, we're gonna go our jerky. That's the main
our
one.
Jerky
our jerky.
Is, yeah, but then you got like the gas station. Jerky.
Oh, the like, what's the Jack snap into Slings. A Slim Jim?
A snap.
Yeah, Macho Jim. Man.
Not even
snap into a Slim Jim, brother.
Yeah.
I think that's Hogan. Whatever.
I'll say, brother.
Yeah, whatever. You know what I'm trying to do.
If you can't all eat right. our jerky, you gotta go with organic.
Okay. All right. I'm down. I might try some of that. That sounds good. I love beef jerky.
Yeah.
What you got, ML?
I'm a sucker for like Hershey's Kisses, like a fucking bag of Hershey's Kisses. I love milk chocolate. I'm not much of a sweets guy, but I do have one sweets on here. Double stuffed Oreos. This is kind of a meal one, but not Del Taco fries. When they're cooked right, salted, curly fries.
I never like crinkle fries, but Del Taco's rule.
Crinkle fries. And I'm not arguing it's the best French fry. I know like McDonald's fries are amazing, a Chick-fil-A waffle, but I crave Del Taco crinkle fries for some reason. That and so a large TJ. Mr. Pibb, and I'm like the happiest person on the face of the freaking earth.
All right.
Nerd clusters. They're basically like nerd ropes, but in cluster forms.
And they're gummy, right?
Yeah, they're gummy, but they have nerds on them. Somebody turned me on those 2 years ago. Those things are dangerous. I'll buy a pack of them just to like eat on a road trip, and I'll eat them in like 10. Destroy the bag in 10 minutes. It's terrible. The last one is kind of a meal item, but like pizza. But if I'm not saying pizza, it's going to be Froyo. I love frozen yogurt.
Okay.
But I mean, just in general, as you joked about, I love pizza. Pizza is the greatest thing ever invented.
It's a perfect top five for the troll training top five.
I will take pizza with other things on top. Yeah. Just give me pizza.
Yeah, you're a big pizza guy. Depends. I got pizza from Italian Kitchen, which is a high des thing. I don't know. Maybe that's everywhere, but I had it in high des. That was some of the best pizza I'd ever had. But I'm not a big pizza guy normally. I know you are. Yeah.
Pizza guy here.
All right. We good? Top five? MotoXpodShow@gmail.com. Get your emails in for top five action movies for next week. I want to hear from you guys. I want to get a big list. Then we can argue what the best action movies of all time are. Like to do a little bit of non-moto
stuff. What's the Batman one that's got Heath Ledger? Is it The Dark Knight Rises?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
That one's top five for me for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know why you're telling us this.
Next week, it's
a good one.
Okay. Let's get into the Evans Coolant emails. Evans Coolant, waterless coolant protects your engine because it always stays liquid. Steam inside the engine creates hot spots and detonation, but with Evans, the metal is always liquid cooled. Used by HRC Honda, Factory Beta, USA, Ampro, Factory Yamaha, and lots of other teams, regardless of their sponsorships. Evans is in the bikes on the podium. Evans, coolant emails. Let me pull these back up real quick. I got a couple here.
Somebody said dipping dots, dipping dark for the snacks.
Guys, chill out. Just chill out. First one I got was from Vince Pale. He was actually giving us pet peeves, which was last week's top five. He said, number one, the other moto media guys that bust your balls. They ain't really that good. Notice JT never chimes in, but he's a total pro. Number two, Steve never has his stats ready. Don't bring stuff up if you've got nothing to go on. ML not finishing his words.
That happens. Okay. Yeah, I'm bad at that.
And four, Lewis saying blah, blah, blah. Again, it's a podcast. Expound, please. That's only four, dude.
Does Lewis literally say blah, blah, blah?
I've heard him say blah, 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 but like I don't remember it being a regular thing.
Yeah.
So, but this is what Vince Pale said. What's that?
Just to like skip over what he was like.
Yeah, I think he just like, kind of, yeah, I think when he's just moving on.
Not finishing words. Me and my dad are both terrible about that. We do it in conversations, where we just think
start the word.
You start the next sentence.
Start the next sentence without finishing, thinking people are just going to put it together. bad habit. Very bad habit.
Our regular Shane Bagley, who gives us an email every week. Thanks, Shane, for getting involved. Said, love seeing Jason give Jet some act right. Don't wait on me and touch me thinking I'm not going to reciprocate even harder. This isn't kids in the 250s. These are men. Jason doesn't steer away from this type of stuff. Mess with the bull, get the horns. Right on, Shane. I think that's pretty much all I got on emails. I'm kind of scrolling through. Yeah, that's it. Any Instagram posts or anything that stood out to you this week? Nothing?
Nope. It's your show, man.
I'm just making sure you don't have anything to chime in. We will jump right into the Prox highs and lows then. Prox is rooted in racing from motocross to off-road and supporting teams such as Ampro Yamaha, Pro Circuit Kawasaki, and SLR Honda. They've been supplying quality components for almost 50 years, from complex jobs like an engine rebuild to simple maintenance, like including filters, chains, and sprockets. Prox aims to bridge the gap between OE quality and affordability. Find Prox at your local dealership or visit prox-usa.com and search for parts for your bike. Highs and lows. You want me to go first?
Yep.
Okay. For me, the highs, 49ers moving on to the NFC Championship this week.
You were sitting, literally were during... last week's race, mm-hmm. last weekend's race.
Just, yeah.
I thought you were going to have a conniption not being able to get to see the game. And then every once in a while, I'd see you watch the race and you see the scoring. But also, I hear you over there go, and I'm
I was huffing and puffing. I wasn't having a conniption. I was just trying to get my sister's login to work, and it wasn't. I was like, oh, well, I guess I'm not going to watch. So I was watching the ticker. And I had like guys like Kiefer going.
I literally thought somebody crashed once during the game.
Oh, yeah. You did. So what happened? You were like, score. You were looking at the track and you're like, what? And I was like, oh, just the game score. Yep. But they moved on. One more race, one more game to go, and hopefully they make the Super Bowl. So that's big. High for me was Aaron Plessinger. Just so happy for that guy. He's just one of the best. So congrats to him. No rain at A2 and Ricky Brabeck winning Dakar. Those are my highs, my lows. Are Christian Craig just struggling? I want to see better for the guy. He's better than the results he's been getting. At least I believe he is. I'd like to see better for him. I feel bad for the guy. Phil Nicoletti, transmission breaking, and rain at San Diego. I mean, it's fucking San Diego. It's not supposed to ever rain there. Those are my highs and lows.
I wouldn't say that.
Highs and lows.
That's not supposed to. It was being sarcastic. Like it just feels like it's San Diego. It should never rain.
Highs and lows. I have the same high and the same low.
Okay.
Highs. My van works again. Lows. Oh, yeah. I spent a week working on a freaking Sprinter van.
Yeah, your van's back. That's a good one, actually. Yeah.
High and low. I am so over. Anybody has a Sprinter van? All right, vans in general. Vans in general suck to work on. They're packaged so. Oh, I love vans for dirt bike riding, but then you have to work on them. Everything's hard to get
compact,
to.
Yeah.
And then, my lows. Whoever invented Torx headed bolts, I hope that person got hung at the fucking gallows when they came up with them. I hate working on anything with Torx headed bolts.
Yeah.
Dumbest thing ever made.
I that was one of my frustrations when I had the Husky 350. It was the Torx head.
Well, these are even the opposite Torx head. They're the ones that are the star heads, even.
Oh, yeah.
Fun. So stupid.
Right on. You got some highs and lows, Derek Kelly?
Obviously, low. You gotta say the rain in San Diego.
Yep.
That's hard not to. I was after San Francisco rain. You can't have two rain races in a row. And
I feel the same way.
I asked so many mechanics and like riders and everybody in the paddock I walked by. I'm like, anybody remember having two mud races in a row? I never had a single person, like even longtime mechanics have been there 20, 30 years. Nobody could answer that question. Yeah. Nobody remembers having two mud races in a row.
It's not normal.
No, for sure. And then another low would be my boy Duran. He filled in for the team this weekend. He was really riding good in the heat and lost it and and dumped her in the mud, so he didn't end up making the main. But I think that's all for my lows. And then the highs, I was really stoked for Garrett Marchbanks in the main.
Good one, yeah. We haven't mentioned him.
We haven't talked about that yet. He was really on fire. I thought he was going to run away with it, honestly.
Yeah, was it Sorensen? Was it Sorensen? Jorgensen. That kind of, got in his way and maybe cost him,
Yeah, that was a bummer. Obviously, he's a young kid and probably thought he could get around the corner and just kind of stuffed it. But, that was a high and a low, I guess.
Sure,
But
he's been riding well, so.
Yeah, and then we got sun next weekend. It's going to be sunny and 75 A2. And beautiful. So that'll be fun to see some real racing. And you guys mentioned earlier, like, with how the 450 class works, usually 3-4 rounds, then we start seeing breakers. I think we're really on round two now. So
so the rain almost could be a high in the fact that, like, the points and the results are kind of all over the place. So
it's extended out that feeling we usually get every A1 where it's, oh, we got six or eight guys that can win. And after two rounds, you're like, oh, yeah, I was full of shit. That's actually not right.
TJ said his highs were Jet and Jason Anderson getting into it, and his low was
good entertainment.
Yeah, that's TJ for you. And is RJ being 13 points down? Scotty sent in AP wins. The points being what it is so far. Lower mud, the mutter, and it feels like the series hasn't really started yet, which we kind of had like Jay Coop talk about. So those are the Prox highs and lows. We'll do the EVS picks for A2 and EVS over the past 39 years. Has established themselves as a leader in innovation and technology when it comes to designing protection gear for today's motocross riders. Athletes like RJ Hampshire, Kyle Chisholm, Freddie Norn, Axel Hodges, and Travis Pastrana all wear EVS when they race, ride, or whatever Travis decides to do that day. So check out EVS-sports.com and use the code VITALMX30, all caps, to save and gear up like the pros. I've used their knee braces recently, their Axis Pro knee braces. I talked about, I love the under, they call it the technical under gear. Have you ever used any EVSF? Do you like anything in particular?
Yeah, I like their roost guards are really good.
Yep.
If I were to run knee pads, I'd probably run their TP 199 knee pads or whatever you call it. But I'm an Asterix guy, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Asterix
knee braces and all that good stuff. But no, EVS makes some good stuff.
ML, anything stand out for you from EVS that you like?
I like the knee guards
when riding pit bikes. Like TJ turned me on to that the first time I rode pit bikes with him.
Yeah.
And I haven't done a lot of pit bike riding. I just busted my knees to shit. He's like, well, you're supposed to wear knee guards. I'm like, oh, cool, cool. So thankfully they sent me some of the TP 199 ones and they're perfect.
As dumb as it sounds, a lot of brands have copied them. Their long motocross sock, like, is, I think it's the one that like the stance end up being based on everybody went to, where it's got like the right pad, it's kind of like really thin and it has like padding on top of the foot and a little bit on the bottom, and it's cut like a couple different materials and it's good quality, like the elastic doesn't blow out on it really easy. Their socks I remember are really really good.
Okay, EVS supporting the show, and we're gonna do the EVS picks for A2. Scotty sent in his from first to third: Kenny Roczen, Webb, and Jet Lawrence. TJ said Jet, Webb, and Sexton. That's his top three. I'm going Webb, Jet, and Eli. I really wanted to go Roczen, but my first initial instinct to win, my first initial instinct, I don't even have on the podium, so I'm probably going to be wrong. DK, what's your podium for A2?
We got to go in order?
Like, yeah, let's give me a first. Who's going to win A2?
I think I got to go Jet. Yeah, I mean, he's got a fire under him, I think, mm-hmm. and it's going to be dry, so... And it, obviously, you want A1, dirt, whatever.
That's true.
I think Rox is going to be on the podium.
Okay.
I think he could pull out a second.
You're probably right.
He's fast. He's really coming into form. I'm really impressed with how, like, over the last few years, he's kind of had a resurgence. Number three, I think Webb.
I feel like Webb's 100%. I'm going to go 100% Webb's on the podium. Like, I'm stamping him as a podium guy this weekend. ML?
I'm going to go Roczen for the win. I feel like he's definitely in a position where he not robbed a win, but lost his chance. It's interesting seeing his post. He doesn't seem frustrated. He seems bummed because I think he genuinely thinks he can win right now and feels good, which that's always dangerous for me with Kenny. I'm going to go Webb second. I think Webb's on great form right now, very fired up, and Sexton third.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to go with.
It's a good podium. Guys, I want to get your thoughts on these. I want your podium. Send me your podiums, motoxpodshow@gmail.com. Just do it before Saturday night, like halfway through the main. That doesn't count. Send them in. I want to see what you guys think. Get involved with all the different topics we're doing, the Evans Coolant emails, the Prox highs and lows, troll training top fives.
Really, join the MotoX Pod League on Vital Fantasy.
Yep.
It, like, as we mentioned, it has its own prize. What is next week's prize? Are we back
to Race Tech? We'll be back to Race Tech. So, yeah, Race Tech
shock rebuild,
free shock rebuild. So, that's really cool. We've got some rotating. I have not sent any of the prizes out yet because all the stuff has been sent to my house. So, I got to get there and kind of make sure that happens. But we'll be getting prizes out soon. And it's just fun. I actually haven't looked at any of my results, because all 3 weeks in a row, I've had like two or three guys score 0 points. So I am just getting destroyed in our fantasy league and the Pulp Fantasy League. I just suck. But it's fun to do. I think it's fun to talk shit with your boys. And it's just something else to make kind of gives you something else to look at with the race. Before we close this thing out, are there any other topics you always want to get to? Veronica, doesn't matter. Kiefer already blew her out. Kiefer already blew her out. It doesn't matter. She said I can talk about the date. So,
that's all I've seen all show long is, when does Dark talk about his date?
I mean, there's not that much to talk about. I mean, we're not going to have a 20-minute conversation, but I know what everybody wants to know. We'll get there in a second. But is there any other topics that either of you would like to talk about with the show before we finish with the date?
Nope, Dark's date.
I'm just not even filled in on this whole Dark date thing.
Well, okay.
Dating Dark, it's a whole thing.
So, I've been single for over a year.
Okay.
I guess a week and a half ago, I've been at Kiefer's all month. We're sitting in the hot tub, me, Chris, and Heather. And Chris was like, hey, Heather, do you have any friends that you could set Dark up with? And she thought about it for a second. She came up with an idea. She texted, she showed me a picture. I was like, yeah, she's hot. She sent a text to this person. Her name's Amber. Everybody knows it now. She was interested, so we went on a date. We just kind of hung out. We went out with her friends and just chilled out. That was date one. Date two, we went to dinner and hung out again. And we hung out a few times. We hung out three times now. So I guess it's three dates. We've been texting a lot. Like, she's really rad. Steve Calder live on the show last week because I was in studio at Pulp. Was it last week? Yeah, it was last week. Anyway, but they're, you know, with Kiefer being Kiefer, do you know Kiefer at all?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I know Kiefer, yeah.
Kiefer loves to talk about sex. Loves it. Like, it's no big deal.
It's his favorite.
So the term, did you dip the dog, came up, and she knows about this, so everybody's asking that. They basically want to know if we've had sex, and I'm not going to answer that question.
Don't kiss and tell.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going. But we've had three really good dates. We did hang out in the hot tub at the Kiefer's. Mm-hmm. Just her and I the other night. That was date three. We had dinner and then hung out in the hot tub. And yeah, if you guys are at A2, she's going to be at A2. So you can ask her anything you want.
Be careful. Be respectful.
Don't be total assholes. But it's been really great. She's cool. She's rad. She loves off-road. She was like king of the hammers this last weekend. She's a cool chick. She's fun to talk to. She's fun to hang out with. She's pretty easygoing. So the dates have been good.
That's great.
We had a lot of fun. On the last date, we had a lot of fun on every date. That's what I'm going to give you guys. So, yeah, you know, if she wants to answer those other personal questions, maybe she will, but we're not going to get there tonight. So, yeah, I'm not going to be an asshole. Kind of disrespectful, don't you think?
That is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
If she were to really say, yeah, you can go ahead and answer that question, I would.
I mean, it's your business too.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, yeah, she's actually texting right now. So we'll give it a couple seconds to see what she says.
You have a date tonight, right?
Well, I don't know.
What?
Let me read what she said here. She said, just tell them we did it so they'll be happy. But that doesn't make it the truth. That doesn't mean it actually happened, though. So
just be happy for Dark.
Yeah.
Somebody's got, he did it with a bunch of explanation points.
How about if I say this? We didn't. We actually didn't.
Yeah.
So how about that?
More comments. He for sure did it.
Well, yeah. I think he's not going
to answer. That means yes.
She's pretty rad, though.
Dark, so, tip the dog. Tip the dog heart emojis. Jesus Christ, these people.
Well.
Your people.
Tell you I got a text yesterday morning at like 5 a.m. from Kiefer because he's on the East Coast. He's like wanting to know what happened because you know, we had been in his hot tub. And, you know, he's like, what'd you do in my hot tub? But anyway.
For a hot tub cleaning.
She's really cool, man. It's been good. So got a shout out to Heather and Chris. And, of course, thank you for introducing me to her, but also thank you for everything, the hospitality all month. And yeah, nothing else, guys. We're good.
I'm good.
Okay. I want to thank our presenting sponsors, Racetech and Yamaha Motor USA, as well as Prox, X Brand, Guts Racing, FXR, Troll Training, Evans Coolant, EVS, possibility of a couple other sponsors coming on pretty soon. We've been working on a few, so look for some more coming soon. We're back next week with show 300, which as of now is Ken Roczen and Eli Tomac. Hopefully nothing falls apart and maybe one other guest. We'll let you know. But yeah, other than that is the Moto X Pod Show episode 299. We are out.